Welcome to Declare Your Independence on the Free Talk Live Network.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Please, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, from the beautiful desert of Sonora. This is, I'm really excited about the future. We're going to have abundance. We're going to have, well, I don't know about peace. We'll work on that. And we'll work on just an understanding. What's happened over the last few years is certainly with, imagine my lifetime. You know, I'm over 60 now, and, that means I was born in 61. So I go through Vietnam. I'm a little kid. You're having dinner, and you're watching Vietnam, you know, on the television, the same freaking scenes over and over. Even as a kid, I'm going, don't they got more footage than that, you know? So, but it was just to keep the war going. It was just to keep it. There was not like a win. It was the enduring kind of thing. Then you start getting a little bit older and you have friends with older brothers that go die, kill, maimed. My uncle went to Vietnam. He came back different. You know, you have that. Then you get into Watergate. It's on TV all the time. You know, then you have, you know, inflation and Carter and oil embargo and, you know, Cold War and invasion of Afghanistan by the Soviets. And it's just, and Red Dawn, you know, with, Patrick Swayze and, you know, Charlie Sheen and so on. Red Dawn. Then you look back and you go, damn, that was, you know, getting kind of accurate. Then you have, through the 80s, you know, this economic thing, which was continuation of all of the malinvestment and all the expense and the war spending of Vietnam just kind of continue. You get inflation and you have, you know, the 80s were, and then you get Iran-Contra. Savings and loans fiasco, you know, economics again. The first Gulf War, Ruby Ridge, Waco, Oklahoma City, 9/11, more war. You know, it's my life has been not peaceful. It has not been the promise. And I found the libertarian philosophy. I go, God, why is this not being done? Because it decentralizes down to the individual. And it's always about collectivizing. It's always about, if I could glean $5 in 5 minutes from everybody on the planet, we could make me rich, and then I might do something good with it, you know? So it's always this idea of collectivizing. One of the people throughout this that really had a beginning of my awareness and understanding, it was called Freedom Daily. That was the name of that little book, wasn't it, Jacob? You know, Freedom Daily?
Yep.
You know? So the Freedom Daily was like a pocket, you know, essays, you know, and articles and so on. This is before the internet, okay? You had little pocket things, all right? So you'd subscribe, and I had friends that have it, and we'd share it and pass it around and all that kind of stuff. And it was Jacob Hornberger. Jacob Hornberger from the Future of Freedom Foundation, FFF.org. And I want to show you the page here. Boom. And there's Jacob. Say hello. So we have the Future of Freedom Foundation has articles that you know, just explain stuff to you. He has, you know, like James Bovard become a good friend. John Whitehead has been very helpful in a lot of different things. And these, and then, of course, Hornberger's blog. Now, one of the articles, Irwin Schiff and the Compassion of Social, the Compassion, quotes, Social Security. So we're going to talk about government programs. And one of the things was he had an article on the 27th, which was just the last couple, yesterday. And I saw it, The Disaster of Libertarian Reform of Socialism. And I know what he's talking about. It's a, I remember L. Neil Smith referred to it. He goes, "You nerf libertarians with your foam core platform." So I'm going, okay, because we were hard. So he really liked Arizona because we were really hardcore on this stuff. So we gravitated towards Jacob Hornberger, and he's running for president again. He did before, and it's just, you know, you can see where the power is. It's somebody with a bunch of money. It's like the Koch brothers, which are supposed to be libertarian, Cato, that kind of stuff, supporting Nikki Haley. I'm like, well, that doesn't surprise me. It might surprise a lot of other people. But you have to understand what they really are all about is kingmaking. How can we use a libertarian candidate or effort or a threat in some congressional race or Senate or whatever to throw it to the other party and have some control if they don't do our energy policy the way we want or something? Politics is a mess. It is never what they say. If they're opening their mouth, they're talking. It's not that. Jacob Hornberger is not like that. He has a hardcore principle. He is one of the first speakers we had at our Freedom Summit, the first one we did 3 weeks after 9/11, you know, by the way. And so this is, I've known Jacob for a long time, and he's been an inspiration, not just to me, but to gazillions of other people and to the philosophy and the movement. So I want to get caught up with Jacob as we're going into the year of war and 24 election. So it's war in 24. I mean, you know, here we go. And to navigate that, you know, for us, Jacob Hornberger is going to help us understand. Because he's been paying attention. I mean, I do Freedom's Fee. I go through a lot. But I don't have to scratch the surface. Right? Yep, there's a headline. Yep, that's what's going on. Yep, that's what, you know. And I just, we're building out in the debt. It's that time. It's like, you know, we're out here helping. We'll do whatever and be an inspiration for a solution. Which is be more self-sufficient, get out, get out, get out. The call came from inside, man. So, Jacob, I'm just letting you monologue me. And what I want to understand and have the audience understand is your path to libertarianism, what you define that is, why it's so appealing to you, and the issues that you see the Libertarian Party compromising just to get along, go along, get more money, somebody pay of mother-in-laws, invite them to Christmas dinner still without them being too radical. Because all the stuff from the 90s that we were hardcore activists doing, all that stuff, all of a sudden, oh, you libertarians were right. Hell, you know, I even had a bunch of people, God, you're going, man, you guys were right. You know, prominent people, you know, you guys had a point. Yeah, you're kind of right, you know. But it's still, they're answering the siren song of something else. There's something, is it, we got infiltrated, we lost our confidence as a group, as a party. Is the party even the way, the philosophy, all that? And start off with your beginning of becoming libertarian, how it is that you care that the Libertarian Party itself be a beacon for something, what that should be, how it's all you, man, go.
Well, Ernie, it's great to be back with you, and you've been an inspiration for me. Thank you for your kind words, and you and I have been friends for so many years, and it's just been great to know you and go on your show and interact with you, and like I say, you've been a real inspiration for me.
Thank you.
When I grew up in Laredo, Texas, there on the border, I grew up as a Democrat. I really, when I got back to Laredo to practice law after college and law school, I was a Democrat. I really believed the government should be helping the poor. I couldn't understand why anybody would object to that. After all, it was the government's money. Why shouldn't it be free to use its money the way everybody else uses their money? And then I discovered libertarianism. And it happened because I walked into the public library of all places there in Laredo, just looking for something to read. And I find these four little books that had been published by the Foundation for Economic Education called Essays on Liberty. And I started perusing them, and it was a Road to Damascus experience. I was just blown away. All the indoctrination that encased my mind from the public schools that my parents had been forced to send me to, it was just cracking apart reading these essays. But the distinguishing characteristics of these essays was that it was hardcore libertarianism. It was no reform of this, Social Security reform, school vouchers, immigration reform. It was just pure libertarianism. And that influenced me for the rest of my life, because I believe that the only way you're going to break through this indoctrination is with hardcore libertarianism among other people. So, you know, I ultimately left the law practice. I went to work at the Foundation for Economic Education and then started the Future of Freedom Foundation. But over the years, I found that many people in the libertarian movement started adopting Republican principles, and especially in the Libertarian Party. And the idea was, I call it Republican Light. The idea was, and I saw this when I was serving on the platform committee back in the 1990s, I served three terms. There were people coming in saying, look, if we're going to get elected to office, we need to appear credible to people. And if we start calling for abolishing Social Security and Medicare and open borders and separating school and state, healthcare in the state, we can't get votes. We can't get elected. So what we're going to do is we're going to move over into a reform-oriented direction, Republican Light. They called it transitional measures. Well, I resisted this from the very beginning. I mean, this is not freedom. I'm in this for freedom, just like you are, the way you started out.
Hey, what year was this about?
1990.
Okay.
Now, when I was invited to serve on the platform committee, I didn't know much about the Libertarian Party. I mean, I knew about it, but I didn't know the details. So this guy calls me and says, I want to invite you to serve on the platform committee. He had seen the work that I was doing with FFF. He knew that I believed in total libertarian principles. So he says, I said, no, I don't want to serve. And he says, why? And I said, because this is a political party. I know that all you're doing is just taking ad hoc public policy views that are reform-oriented, compromising principles to get votes. So he says, well, have you seen the party platform? And I said, no, but I said, I know what it is, just a bunch of reform stuff to get votes. And so he says, let me send it to you. Well, he sends it to me, and I was bowled over, Ernie. I mean, this was a pure, not 100% libertarian manifesto, but pretty close. You know, abolish Social Security, abolish Medicare, open the borders, abolish the CIA, abolish the FBI. I mean, it was incredible. And so I called him up and I said, man, if you'll still take me, I'd love to be in this party. And I didn't ask how many votes they'd gotten in the last presidential election. I didn't ask how much money they had, how many members they had, how much money they had. It didn't matter. I just wanted to be part of a small political party that adhered to principle and that actually calls itself the Party of Principle. So over time, that everything changed, and it has changed. I mean, this is the resistance. It's a fascinating experience to run this time as well as last time, because nobody questions the fact that I'm running on pure, genuine founding principles of this party. But my campaign generates so much hostility. It's a fascinating phenomenon. I mean, there are people in this party that actually hate the genuine principles that I'm enunciating. They don't say Jacob's violating the principles. That's not what angers him. Right. What angers him is that I'm adhering to the principles and I'm exposing. I mean, let me give you an example. You know, all my opponents in the race want to continue Social Security for the next 25 years, the next generation. Well, this is a socialist program. It violates the libertarian non-aggression principle, the pledge that we all take not to initiate force. It's based on taxation. It's a straight socialist program. It takes money from one group of people to another, gives it to another group of people. And they get mad at me when I point this out, that, hey, this is not what freedom's about. Freedom is getting rid of socialism, not extending it for 25 years. And so then same thing with immigration. I mean, everybody favors the Republican position of immigration controls. Not everybody, but I mean, everybody running for the presidency right now favors this system. I'm the only guy that's calling for open borders. Well, if you go back to 1990, it was the exact opposite. I mean, it was clear in the platform. Well, it still is in the platform, but it's this movement, Ernie, toward what I call Republican light. One of my opponents said the other day, if we go with your plan for Social Security, we won't get any votes from seniors. Well, this is ridiculous. I mean, I feel sometimes like I'm a therapist grounding people in reality. Seniors are never going to vote for libertarians. I don't care how good your 25-year plan for Social Security is, especially when you start talking about opt-outs, which they all do, and giving young people a choice. There's not a chance that any senior is ever going to vote libertarian. So why even target that audience? That's where the reality check comes
in. Hey, man, I'm getting to be a senior. I'd vote for freedom.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the only seniors who will vote for a Libertarian Party presidential candidate who favors Social Security are the Libertarian seniors. But nobody out there. So what I keep saying is we need to target different groups of voters. But there's this mindset that Republicans are our target audience. This is when you hear like a small government. There's a mantra that my opponents use called, we favor small government. Well, that's a favorite Republican mantra. You know, a smaller DEA, a right. smaller ATF, a smaller Homeland Security. So what I'm trying to do in this campaign is just find the people that say, my gosh, Jacob's right. We need to restore the founding principles of this party and run a presidential campaign that's based 100% on principle. Now, the other thing, if you just let me continue a couple more minutes, sure. The other thing I'm emphasizing in this, which it irritates a lot of people, is that I keep pointing out that this is the reason for the 1% vote. And you know, our presidential candidate got 1% 3 years ago. There's two Wall Street Journal polls that have already come out 3 years later, stating 1%. The newest poll from California State University puts us at 0%. 0%. And, you know, the common notion and the rationalization in the party is, oh, we just haven't gotten our message out. If people knew our message, like if we got in the debates, we'd get more than the 0%.
Hell, if they knew what it was and you'd be clear about it, I want to give Jacob a freaking big platform. This is, yeah, you misunderstood me when I said, as a senior, I'd vote for elimination of Social Security. Because I am now old enough to be able to qualify. And my son-in-law does retirement planning and whatever. You go, oh, come on, let's sit down, let's go through it. All right. So Donna and I, she'll be 62 in 20th of March. So we go, woohoo, how many thousands of dollars can we get? You know? So we go in and start, I mean, two, three questions in, I'm done. I'm done. I don't care. You know, it doesn't. Well, you have to this, and you can't make that, and you still, and you got to be almost dead and retired, and got enough anyway to be able to not work and kind of that's. You know, I don't care. But you get. I don't care. I don't care. I'm not. It's. I mean, it's kind of. You know, it's kind of my money. You know, I put in. I get some back, and maybe and kind. But I never expected, as a young libertarian in my late 20s, that it would even be there for me to get. I'm like, woohoo, man, I could get that, Dad, I don't care. And it's not that I couldn't use it. It's just so ooh. And it brings you dependent in on which was the point. You know, it's a gilding of the cage kind of thing. So I just wanted to make that clear. You know, I apologize. Continue.
The point I was making is that this message of reform is the reason why they can't do well. In other words, they're by copying the Republican Party, and these are principles the Republican Party stands for: Social Security reform, Medicare reform, immigration reform, school vouchers. By copying those principles, the idea was, well, we can pull votes away from Republicans. It never works because people will not cross party lines. And so there's no constituency out there. In other words, there's no big group of passionate voters for this reform message. For a libertarian candidate, there is for a Republican candidate. I mean, I'll give you an example is Justin Amash. I mean, he's figured this out. He's a smart guy. He comes into the Libertarian Party with this standard reform message, you know, reform, Social Security reform, immigration, and so forth. And now he's going back to the Republican Party to run for Senate in a vicious campaign, primary campaign. They're going to attack him for voting to impeach Trump. Trump's going to come after him. They're going to say he betrayed the party by joining the Libertarians. Why is he doing this? Why not just vote? Why not just run as a Libertarian? He could have the nomination on a silver platter. There would be no primary fight because he's figured out that as a reform message for a Libertarian Party candidate, you get 0 to 1, maybe 2%. Over there, the reform message, he can win because the reform message is so popular in the Republican Party. So that was the fallacy, that because something was successful over there in terms of reform, that it would work over here with us. So the biggest mistake we ever made was abandoning our principles, the principles I'm enunciating. But I have an uphill battle in this fight. I mean, I feel like I'm a salmon swimming upstream in the American Northwest because this mindset of reform is so deeply ingrained in this party. I mean, it's just amazing that you go to these conventions and people really believe deeply in Social Security reform and Medicare reform and school vouchers and military reform and DEA reform. And I'm sitting there, you know, swimming upstream. But each time I go through one of these debates, almost inevitably somebody comes up to me and says, Jacob, you have opened my eyes on the importance of principle. One guy came up to me after one debate and said, I've been a proponent of border controls all my life. After this debate, you have opened my eyes. I'm now a proponent of open borders. So I'm making a little bit of progress here. I know that there's some people that really do believe in the genuine founding principles of this party, and that's what my campaign's all about, running a campaign of pure principle.
And that's why I've been so supportive of Jacob, just not as, a nice guy. He can explain things well. You read any of his articles, Donna's putting some stuff up now. You know, it's like, what he said. It's rational, it's articulated well. And when you have people of strong character, that they are looking for the truth, not what Google says is the truth, the truth. I grok that, you know, I understand, I see you, you know, that you're looking for the truth of things, things that you want to share with your kids and your grandkids, things that you can stand behind, things that are solid and principled and you have an understanding of. When you can do that, you know, you're at peace more with yourself. You're not having to lie to yourself. When you compromise is death. The reason is because when you're always compromising, you're giving up a little bit more of your presence, a little bit more of your soul. You're giving up a little bit more.
This hour of Free Talk Live is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is the cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. In addition to being one of the world's first cryptocurrencies, Dash was the first crypto project to have a decentralized autonomous organization that to this day continues to improve and promote Dash. Every month, 10% of the mining rewards go into a treasury. Anyone with one Dash to spend can put forward a proposal to the Dash masternodes. The masternodes vet the proposals and decide which ones move forward and are funded by that treasury. Nowadays, DAOs are plentiful, but Dash paved the way by doing it first, nearly a decade ago. Dash is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges, including the decentralized Maya protocol, and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org. Thanks to the Dash DAO for sending us 32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash, Dash.org.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
This hour, Declare Your Independence on the Free Talk Live Network is brought to you by Dash Digital Cash. Dash is a cryptocurrency designed to be used for spending. Let's talk about your positive experiences using Dash. Dash has transaction fees that are less than 1 cent. Dash transactions are instant, irreversible, and are protected from 51% attacks by its chain locks technology. Dash is the world's first decentralized autonomous organization. BitRefill allows for discounted purchases at national retailers. We want to thank Dash DAO for sending us
32 Dash per month to promote Dash on the air. Visit Dash.org to learn about Dash. Dash.org is one of the oldest cryptocurrencies and is widely available on exchanges and in multi-crypto wallets. It's easy to get and use. Dash. Start by learning more at Dash.org.
When you compromise, compromise is death. The reason is because when you're always compromising, you're giving up a little bit more of your presence, a little bit more of your soul. You're giving up a little bit more. Well, let's compromise. Okay, let's get a compromise. There was a popular talk show host in Arizona during our campaigns, and so, yeah, Ernie, you know, the libertarians, you can't deal with them. They're always goose-stepping to their platform, and they won't compromise. I'm like, well, you can say that as often and as loud as you want, you know? So this is, it's been lost. And it was the reason why I've run for national chair probably four or five times. I mean, I just always do it just to do exactly what Jacob's doing. It's just like, look, man, you guys don't see what's up. Because we have a lot of success in Arizona. Wall Street Journal comes out, the Libertarian State, Arizona. We get all kinds of freedom stuff going, everything, because it was a general public opinion. It was clearly articulating and explaining certain things. Well, then, of course, you know, it's unrestricted concealed carry. You know, it's constitutional carry, they'll call it. And I won't let them get away with that, because when you come in contact with any law enforcement, you have to say, I'm carrying a gun. I mean, I'm going, no, that's whatever. But anyway, the point is that this general public opinion is shifting, and it already has, with the Ron Paul Lovolution and, you know, 8 and 12 and so on. They created a group of, you know, at least they understand certain things, or the popularity of freedom and the advocacy of it, and you bring young people in to whatever. So that is a lot of what the Republicans give lip service to a lot of this stuff, but they're not able to really understand, grasp the base fundamental principles of the positions that we take, so that you would know what a libertarian's position is on just about anything. Freedom is the answer. What's the question? You know, so Jacob represents that. Now, let's get into some controversial things. Social Security is fairly easy. You're taken from some people and redistributing to other people on the promise that the other people will do you as just socialist as hell, you know. So that is a bad idea. And then, of course, during the late 90s, Republicans said, well, we're going to have it private trust accounts and that you get to manage it. And we're going to let you put it in the stock market. Yeah. That's the ticket. That'll be the way to do it. Let them waste it. You know, it's just so bad. You know, we'll give you a little bit of control, give you a little bit, but we're definitely going to take it from you, okay? We just want to make sure you know we're going to take it. So, but it's open borders. I'm an open border guy. The apparatus that you have to even do the border thing, and, well, they're taking this, and they're getting that, and they're getting free. I go, that's the problem. Socialism is the problem. I got to tell you, and it was tainted for me in, when was it? It was like 81, 2. I was in New York City for a few months living there. And there was a Russian. We had our landlord was a Russian Jew that escaped. Her and her sons came. They started businesses on and on. Well, they had a Christmas party they invited us to. You know, even though she's Jewish, her husband was a postal carrier here, so they're allowed to have a Christmas party. So one of the guests there was Russian. He spoke English. And he goes, well, you guys aren't free. You're free to starve. You know, you're free. You can't get a job. You got to do this, that. I want to go back to Russia where at least I got an apartment or something. He was complaining about that. And I'm going, well, we're not here to give you a job, but don't want to prevent you from getting one either, you know? So it's the socialism. It is what they want to give you. Vote this way, I give you this. Come on in. Here's a check. It's ridiculous. You do away with all of that, and it's just human beings voluntarily interacting with other peaceful human beings. When I had a restaurant, they had a form called an I-9, and on there it says, I have examined the documents, and they appear to be genuine to me. Hey, man. Last I knew, Uncle Sam was doing it on napkins. I don't care, you know. So this is my best employees were people that got off their butt and went to go work. So I've had personal experience for decades dealing with employees and people. Are there bad guys? Absolutely. And when you hang out a carrot and you say, all this could be, all you got to do is come over and we'll give you some in here and have an AK-47. I guess just, what'd you think was going to happen? And to think that you're going to be able to stop the worst of them from coming over, you know, is ridiculous. I am just, that. So Jacob grew up on the border in Laredo, I think it was, right? You know, in Texas. And so as experience, I'm in Arizona. When I first went to Arizona as a young kid, 12 years old in the early 70s, Hispanics and Americans lived on both sides of the border and worked on the other side back and forth and went, and it was, you know, Hispanic people working everywhere and did. It was just a free market. They send money home. Well, I don't care. It was just a totally different atmosphere, but we had to blame somebody for the socialism. And they got picked, okay? Well, they're taking from, I go, I don't care if you're from Appalachia. You know, if you're a hillbilly, southern boy, bayou, kind of whatever, and you're getting my money, what's the difference? So that's my personal, kind of, I can give, go on and on and on, but I just want you to understand where I'm at, my preference. I do not see a close. Now, if you want to have a border check, you come on in, you don't have tuberculosis and, you know, and you're a criminal, or I have Ellis Island or however you want to do it. I'm not in the details. I'm kind of fuzzy on, but the fact that it's open border, anybody wants to come here, wants to work, wants to visit, wants to, you know, they're just now having another dozen countries have stopped visas. Now, fine, I guess they check your passport or something, but you don't have to get permission to go to their country. You know, it's just, yeah, bring it. Come on in. So I'm looking at this issue, and I know no one better to articulate it and explain it than Jacob. So, Jacob, I want you to explain the principles and the rationale and the real reactions and the policies of open borders so that you can articulate. You're not Joe Biden, okay? So from a freedom perspective, as a benefit to everybody that lives in the country, for real red-blooded Americans, okay, why open borders is important. Go.
All right, well, you know, as you pointed out, I grew up on the border in the 50s and the 60s, 70s. I spent three decades living on the border. So it's tempting to think that this immigration crisis is a new phenomenon because everybody's all hyped up about it. Actually, we've had this crisis continuously since I was a kid. It's never gone away. And for example, on our farm, at that time, it was legal to hire illegal immigrants. I grew up on a farm on the Rio Grande. We hired illegal immigrants, but the Border Patrol could come onto our farm whenever they wanted without a warrant. And if we didn't give them a key to our lock at the front gate, they would shoot it off. And this is what a police state's all about, warrantless searches. When I was in high school, I was headed to the beach, and Border Patrol agent just pulled me over at random, turned on his light, no broken taillight, no excuse, just pulled me over and said, open up your trunk. I mean, this is what life is like in a police state. So the crisis has been going on for decades. And as I've been saying for more than 30 years here at the Future of Freedom Foundation, including in my book 30 years ago, The Case for Free Trade and Open Immigration, you will always have this crisis and you will always have a police state to enforce it. There's no way around it. And as you were mentioning socialism, the reason that you have this crisis is because this system is based on the socialist principle of central planning. The government is planning the movements of people in a complex labor market involving millions upon millions of people with employers all over the United States. And as Ludwig von Mises pointed out, whenever you have central planning, you're going to have what he called planned chaos. It's because the government doesn't have the requisite knowledge that can substitute for all of the individual pieces of knowledge that everybody has all over the country. A guy in Oregon knows what he needs to harvest his crop. The government official in Washington cannot factor that in because market conditions are changing every minute. So that's why you have this crisis. And then they get angry and they get frustrated and they say, our system isn't working. So we need to crack down even more. And that's how you get this ever expanding police state. The Berlin Wall they have down there. Now they got concertina wire, the highway checkpoints that I know you're familiar with. They finally ended up criminalizing the hiring of illegal immigrants. They figured, well, that'll cure the problem because if there's no jobs to be had, they won't come. Well, except for false documents, as you were alluding to. So this system will never work. I sit there and say, gosh, if I could just get that point across to the American people, it would give them some degree of peace because everybody paces the floor in anger over the fact that they're not keeping out these hordes of immigrants coming in. Well, my point is they'll never keep them out as long as there's economic opportunity here. And so you can find peace with yourself knowing that the system just doesn't work. Now, let me shift to the libertarian principle here. The core principle of libertarianism, as you know, is the non-aggression principle. It says that libertarians will never support the initiation of force. It's wrong to initiate force. And we even take a pledge in the party to this effect. We vow never to support the initiation of force. Well, when I cross a border, let's say going driving into North Carolina, I cross the North Carolina border there with Virginia. I don't initiate force against anyone. I'm just peacefully crossing a border. I'm not violating anybody's rights by crossing this imaginary line. Well, the same applies to any border. When you cross a political border, you're not violating rights. The person who violates the rights is the person who stops me. If a policeman on the North Carolina side says, pull over, he is now initiating force against me. He's interfering. So here in the United States, we have the greatest free trade and open immigration system in history in terms of geography. I mean, you can go all across this country and never see a border guard. It's incredible. But we take it for granted because we were all born and raised under this system. If we had been born and raised under the same system on the international borders, it would be nothing. There would be no crisis. There'd be no death and suffering. People would just be crossing back and forth like normal human beings. You wouldn't know who was a citizen, who wasn't. You wouldn't care. I mean, when you go into McDonald's today and you hear somebody speaking Spanish in the back there, you don't go and say, I want to see your papers. You don't care. And that's the beauty of open borders. It creates harmonies between people. Now no longer are people having to go in the desert to circumvent the controls. They're not dying in the backs of 18-wheelers. They're not dying crossing the Rio Grande and drowning. So it's a moral system. It's based on the religious principle of thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, treating people the way you would want to be treated. It's a economic system because it's a sound economic system because now people are benefiting from this economic prosperity that free movements of people brings. It always brings prosperity to a nation. Immigrants are like a free gift to a society because they bring because of their intestinal fortitude, the will to leave family and friends and country and customs. They bring in a vitality that's incredible. It's like a free gift in terms of prosperity. So these are the primary arguments. And I've said for more than 30 years now, there is only one solution to this morass on the border, Ernie, and that's open borders. There is no other solution. And I keep hammering this down in the Libertarian Party. I get tremendous resistance, hostility, sometimes even rage. But the fact is, there is no other solution. Socialism is a failed paradigm. Immigration socialism will never be made to work. Freedom and free markets, which is what open borders is the only thing that will ever work. And it's the only thing founded on moral religious principles.
Well, we can get into that too. But from my perspective, it's even more human. It's more basic and fundamental that I have some central planner somewhere telling me who I can and cannot fully associate with, hire, negotiate contract. I want this done. I want this much to do it. You know, we'll make a deal. Make a deal. Maybe he's Republican. Well, maybe he's Libertarian. Okay. You know, so I'm looking for the deal, being able, the freedom to deal, to negotiate, to do, because there are people that could, amazing talent And of course, if it's with a permission slip from the man and they're from India or China and they can code, you know, in the cubicle back there and do it twice as fast and twice as good as someone. Now, okay, well, we'll pick that. We'll do that. You're allowed to do that. That's a central layer. We can negotiate that. There's a special category for that. You know, I'm going, says you. I go, who central plans this? I need a ditch dug. You know, I need brick laid. I need. Here in Arizona, as any of the border states, construction was heavily, you know, so certainly masonry with, you know, Mexican labor. And that kind of went away and it became an issue because socialism diminished the lifestyle and the standard of living for so many people. They had to blame somebody. Somebody took it from them. Somebody, yeah, that guy, that dark-skinned guy over there, this one, they talk funny. They got a different, you know, where America was so benefiting of different cultures, and like, except when they wanted to change what made us American, when they want to have a central plan. You need a central plan better. You need a Latino month or something. You know, you need to have this special holiday. You need to, you know, subsidize this and punish that and penalize whatever. You know, it's all, if you were here for the freedom to associate voluntarily without any coercion of anybody, and it was just, and you're not going to make them hire you. You know, like, you know, you get into this union stuff and everything. I mean, it was, you can unionize all you want because you control your labor and collective bargaining, fine, knock yourself out. But what happens? Government goes, no, you have to negotiate with them. You have to sit down. There is, you know, forced bargaining. There is, I mean, everything in my whole adult life, if I come to understand, is the source of it is coercion. The source of it is a central plan that somebody wants to put in is going to make your life better, pinky swear. While the whole time they're taking away your choices and options to freely enter into a negotiation with another human being, and I don't give a crap where they're from. So this is, and it's from the content of their character, the fruits of their life, that you will know them, and those are the people you want to associate with. So is it going to be a social credit score? Is it going to be a Yelp? Is it going to be an eBay rating on people? Yeah, it's called a resume, okay? It's called checking employers. It's called a pirate list. You know, it's called something. You know, we need to have the freedom of communication, the freedom of travel, the freedom of contract, the freedom. Because if it applies between human beings from anywhere to anywhere, it solves all the problems. What they do is with this immigration control and who you can and cannot marry, can and cannot associate with, can and cannot have a relationship with, can and cannot travel to and from, can and can't. This is why I think they needed to have, you know, somebody to blame, but it's also the world started getting too small. Right before the pandemic, you know, it was, man, I'd go to Moscow. You know, I can travel around. I have friends in Africa. I can go to kind of, the world was getting small. And with abundance and more technology and starships, you know, going in around 40 minutes from Tokyo to New York, they're going to lose control. They already are. And they can't. They have to have some centralized mechanism to control human beings. And immigration is one of those things. Then once they get the world under their control of different countries and philosophies and races and opinions and stuff melding, once they do that, then it comes home. Just like all the surveillance and all the crap that they're doing, retina scans or whatever, and some far-off world war. You think it's not coming here? Of course it is. It's all part of the same thing. It's a philosophy. It's a religion. It's, could it be Satan? I mean, this is, it's bad. The libertarian philosophy, as I came into it in the early 90s, you know, it was about the same time, you know, with Jacob and why we were so impressed with Future Freedom Foundation, the Freedom Dailies, you know, the digest they had. It was because we were looking for someone to articulate what we knew, that, you know, freedom's the answer, what's the question? There has to be some fundamental basic thing. Libertarianism offered that, but it was such a threat that it was invaded by these other guys. Oh, no, we got to have you, to the point that they focus on it. And I want to mention this, and I want to get your comment on it. I saw there was a clip from Klaus Schwab. I don't know if you've seen this. Klaus Schwab gets up and he goes, you know, it's not enough that we be in control, you know, of systems. We need to get our guys in the system, our young youth leading system of system people. We need to be, you know, in charge of the system. But it's not enough that we be in control of the system. Because there's, and he says it, he goes, there's these libertarians that are anti-system. We got to get after them. The libertarian anti-system people are the threat. This is Klaus Schwab. Have you ever seen that clip, Jacob?
No.
Yeah,
No.
I'll pull it up, you know, when you respond to this. And so that's what we're up against. Of course, they invade the Libertarian Party. Of course, they bring in their kind. Of course, they, you know, want to gaslight you and you're not doing it right and you're doing it wrong. You get whatever percentage at the ballot box of whatever. We can't encourage them. They never get more than 3-5%. Oh, my God. In Arizona, they're getting 8-9%. What the hell happened? Well, shut the gates. I mean, you know, it's just, I can see it. Because I kind of more on the outside looking in and, you know, play with it and so on. But this is why I support Jacob Hornberger. He defaults to the principle because principle of freedom's the answer. What's the question? So this invasion into the party and the control of it and these people that come in and the reform mindset and all that's supported by what? Where does that money come from? Where is that, you know, control mechanism? Where is, and it, there has been no proof ever. I've been doing this, got 30 years in the party, and not a single time has a repudiation of the principle or a hedging on the issue a little bit or abandonment of platform, and there's constantly in committee, always trying to change the platform, you know. Where does that come from, you think? Where's the source of that?
Well, let me go back a second. This is why I love your show, Ernie. Why I love you. You really know how to just go to the absolute center of the problem here.
Skip to
and
the
you
end.
You hit the nail on the. Well, when you talked about control, I mean, this really summarizes everything. This huge, massive immigration control system is not just a control on immigrants. It's a control on us. That's what you recognize and you hone in on when you talk about freedom of association. They're saying you don't have a right to invite who you want into your home, into your business, who you can hire. And so the immigration control advocates don't see that it's a massive vehicle to control us. Look at the highways, those highway checkpoints. Roll down your window. Give us your papers. This is a massive system of control. And the other point I want to make here before I get to your question is that it's dumb politics. This is what's so fascinating. You see, inside the party, there's all these immigration control advocates. They dominate now. And they say, well, 90% of American people favor immigration controls. Okay. How many of those 90% are going to vote for a Libertarian Party presidential candidate who favors immigration controls? 0%. Because every one of them is going to vote for Donald Trump. Trump's going to be saying, stop the steal, number two. They're going to steal it from us. Every vote counts. Flood the ballot boxes. Don't waste your vote on a libertarian or anyone else. So that position, even though let's say 90% of the American people favor it, gets 0 votes. My position, open borders, gets the 10% that oppose this system. And plus a lot of other people that never heard the case for open borders that would come over.
I fell into a burning ring of fire. I went down, down, down.
The crimes of the state. Eleutheromania. The insatiable desire for freedom.
The crimes of the state from K through 12th grade. They're taught to open.
It's the new 3-song heavy metal EP from Captain Kickass. Available now on your favorite music app or get it directly from CaptainKickass.com.
Welcome to Declare Your Independence on the Free Talk Live Network.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear here, and declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock. We're continuing our conversation with Jacob Hornberger. He's candidate for President of the United States going for the Libertarian Party nomination. Now, I've known Jacob for a long time, since, 30 years, and he has been a big inspiration to me, and a lot of our advocacies and confidence in philosophy comes from him. Now, one thing that libertarians are often known for is open borders. Now, Jacob does not shy away from that, and he's very adamant in his articulation of that position and why. Maybe we can learn something.
And they say, well, 90% of American people favor immigration controls. Okay. How many of those 90% are going to vote for a Libertarian Party presidential candidate who favors immigration controls? 0%. Because every one of them is going to vote for Donald Trump. Trump's going to be saying, stop the steal, number two. They're going to steal it from us. Every vote counts. Flood the ballot boxes. Don't waste your vote on a Libertarian or anyone else. So that position, even though let's say 90% of the American people favor it, gets 0 votes. My position, open borders, gets the 10% that oppose this system, and plus a lot of other people that never heard the case for open borders that would come over. So now all of a sudden, I'm looking at a large block of votes, of passionate voters that will vote for me to say, my gosh, we're horrified by the concertina wire, the death, suffering. I get that huge block of votes consisting of, let's say it's 10%, that my opponents can't get. Because those voters, those passionate pro-open borders people, are never going to vote for a Libertarian Party presidential candidate that favors border controls. So that's why we're at the latest poll of 0%, because the American people are going to assume, they are assuming, that we're going to run the same kind of candidate we run for the last 20 years, the reform-oriented, Republican-like candidate favoring immigration controls and so forth. Now, your question is a fascinating one, is how did these people come into the party with all of these Republican statist positions, you know, favoring Social Security? I think it's more just a reflection of the times. I don't think it's, I mean, it could be something malevolent, infiltration and stuff, but I always default to the people just assume that this is the right thing to do. We've been taught in this party that school vouchers, for example, or a libertarian position. And you couldn't find anything, a better example of a violation of the non-aggression principle. It's based on taxation. It takes money from one group of people, it gives it to another group of people. It's the same funding measure for public schools. But people come into the party from the Republican Party, and that's, I think, where most of our new members come in, from the Republican Party. And that's freedom to them. So if you were to go do a poll inside the Libertarian Party, including in the LNC, the Libertarian National Committee puts out fundraising letters advancing school vouchers. They have speakers at Libertarian fundraising events featuring school vouchers. If you did a poll in the party and said, do you think school vouchers are a pro-freedom position? I think the overwhelming majority would say yes, simply because that's what they've been taught. And so here I come in. I notice this sometimes when I'm giving a talk at an LPE convention and there's a lot of young people there. They have stunned looks on their faces, Ernie. They've never heard this message before, the message of pure principle. They've been taught that reform is libertarianism. It's been redefined as libertarianism. And for them, that is libertarianism. Social Security reform, Medicare reform, healthcare reform, FDA reform, military reform, DEA reform. And I come in and say, That's not freedom at all. I'm in this for freedom. And for freedom, you got to dismantle infringements on freedom. If all you do is reform freedom, it's like reforming slavery. Reforming slavery would not have meant freedom for slaves. To get rid of slavery, you got to dismantle the structure of slavery. And that's the same thing we got to do here in the United States. We got to dismantle the structure of socialism so we're not serfs anymore.
You know what's happening that I've been, you know, welcome to see, and I found the clip. I'm going to let it load up here because it has been refreshing or expected. You know, it's not a surprise to me that you have Javier Milei, you know, all of a sudden espousing anarcho-capitalism. He's Captain ANCAP. Yeah, that's what you need. You need a black and gold cape, you know, go around being Captain ANCAP. You know, that's what Javier did, man. Woo, you get elected. Well, we had a woman from Argentina on the show. She was Arizona Project, one of these young entrepreneurs they bring every year from all these different countries. And we've been covering that. You know, each year we'll interview all of them. And she was from Argentina, and she's a hardcore libertarian, narco-capitalist kind of whatever. But she's going, yeah, but he's kind of rough around the edges, you know. He's got, you know, kind of moppy hair, and, you know, he's kind of harsh. And I go, he's going to win. I go, I don't think you understand. You haven't seen this before. I go, this is what it takes. This is going to be, it's a hardcore freaking, these guys suck and, you know, whatever. So there's other stuff, questionable things. He's like, you know, he's making nice with the Pope because he knows that most of his country is Catholic. You got church and the state. I mean, you know, it's kind of, so he's not, you know, picking too much of a fight. And then he wants to go to Israel, you know, and he's making nice there. He's playing politics, but he's lopping off government. I mean, it is like, and we don't need that. We don't need that. We don't need that. We don't need that. He balanced the budget, you know, 1 year. He's in there in 6 months, boom, ballot, you know, we got a surplus. You know, so this is, it takes that kind of hardcore, no compromise position, and it's always been what's most popular with any libertarian effort. But all you need to do to buy the party is 10,000 here, 100,000 there for cheap money. You give me $250,000 and I sling it around the country, libertarian part didn't something kind of push a little extra here, and you know, American for Prosperity of, yeah, we kind of, you know, how to spell the word libertarian, and we get this person and that guy, and you're done. You take over the third largest party in the nation on the cheap. And this is what's been happening. I watch it happen. I know the people that do it. This is how it's, this is how you play politics. Well, they want to give you the impression that the Libertarian Party is a party, a political party. It is a freedom movement if you allow it to be, which is how we approached it in Arizona in the 90s, and what had decades of repercussions that rang out through, and it has to happen again. And if we don't do it, it's going to be, you know, watered down by a MAGA thing. You know, make America great again without even knowing why it was great. You know, I mean, okay, what does that mean? How did that happen? What was the difference? It's these kinds of philosophies that are so important that we have these principles articulated cleanly with the knowledge, knowing that you may not get the most votes. But by compromising, they're going down. We are not advancing. We are not freeing minds. If, when we started in the 90s, when we worked really hard on this stuff, you know, making the platform even clearer, going, it wasn't until like 06 when they finally just took the platform, threw it in the trash, and started over, and we're going to be reform guys or something, and it took a nosedive ever since then. Instead of a gradual going up, freeing hearts and minds, and they lost faith. It is a faith in principle, a faith in freedom, a faith. You know, I want to, before I turn it to you, I want to explain this one point that was very important to me that I've come more and more understanding of. There's always a difference between the word freedom and liberty. Liberty, freedom, you know, what's the difference? Freedom is like I'm unshackled. I am free to pull the trigger. I am free to dig the ditch. I am free to build my house. I'm free because I'm free. Somebody's not just sitting on me. You know, they don't have me chained to a rock. You know, I am free to do it. but am I at liberty to do it? And am I in a state of liberty? Do I have the conditions, the atmosphere, the support of a government or permission from my neighbor, whatever, that I'm in a state of liberty to exercise my freedom? Well, I'm free to do. I'm going to build a house out there. And everybody can suck it. I'm far out in the desert. You want to come get me? Well, you know, I'm over here. Come on. Let's play. You guys want to play? Because then we're going to be arguing about, am I in a state of liberty? Am I at, are you at liberty to do that? We're going to find out, okay? And that's what we're going to advocate for. Of course, I'm free to do it. Nobody said, you know, well, we have a complaint from who? I don't see anybody for miles. Nice try. Well, your satellite complained, you know? So this, am I in a state of liberty? No, you aren't. Okay, that's what we wanted to know. Now let's fix that. You see my point? So once I understand that, it's something that you take for yourself. Of course, you can exercise your freedom. But in a state of liberty, is America in a state of liberty? It is not. That's what we have to work on. How do you do that? By advocating for it, by giving examples of it, by inspiring for it, by articulating it, which is what Jacob does. This is why I need it. As much as I deal in the politics now, I don't freaking care. You know, we do the Trump report, Dr. Frank Tamburi, and it's, you know, an old couple yelling at each other for 8 years, 9 years. I mean, it's been since 15. And we're sitting there, you know, outsquitted. You know, and the reason is I'm going, doesn't matter. I don't care. Doesn't matter. Just triggers him. It doesn't matter. I don't care. All this advocacy, all this little fiddling around the edges and so on, you're missing the point. That America, the promise of America, the declaration, why this show is called Declare Your Independence, is because the very clearly, in the beginning of the whole experiment, the first thing, only thing, the reason you create a government is the protection of individual rights. Individual. If it's not doing that, then why are they there? What's the point? To have that articulated, explained, and defended consistently is what I support. Jacob Hornberger. And the fact that that would not be inside the party means it got invaded. There's an insurrection inside. You want to talk about an invasion? It's that. And why? Big money. Interested people do this. I get calls all, we need you to work on, we want to help in Levolution this and doing this kind of thing and whatever. And we got this anti-war campaign against this Montana. What I said, right. You know, the money guys, I mean, to tell you what's going on. I guarantee they're going to use the anti-war issue to have some candidate that will pull enough from him to get somebody else. They do it as a threat because I guarantee he voted against their energy interest on something. Right. And exactly that's what's going on. They're using the Libertarian Party as a kingmaker. And to do that, they have to have certain policies in the way that they want to do it to be able to make it more effective for that. And it's not about freedom. It's not about advocacy for a principle. And it's not about, you know, fixing America, which is what? Make me free in a state of liberty. That's not the goal. It's control. For what they are trying to con us into being. So that's my opinion. And that's why, and I think you know, that's why I support your positions. Where else do you get, you know, it's amazing that you can be so principled and advocate for this for decades that I've known you, and you get varying levels of support, you know, over time. But the machine of politics, the machine of the media. Yesterday, we emphasized a bunch of, you know, the interviews with this guy named Mike Benz on Tucker Carlson and Russell Brand going on about it, of how the machine was created. All the media, all the software, Google, Facebook, everything. It was a campaign by the government. All of this censorship, everything is government directed. Money directed. We are being controlled. And it's only people like Jacob Hornberger that understood how to just navigate right, blaze right through it. Boom. We're advocating for principle. That's the threat. And that's what Klaus Schwab was talking about. I was shocked when I saw that. I was like, woo. Anyway, I'm sorry. Comment on that. My rant.
Well, Well, yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. We need a revolution out there, Ernie, and that's what you're talking about, a revolution for freedom. But I don't think we can achieve that revolution without a revolution inside the Libertarian Party first and the Libertarian movement to a larger extent, a revolution that revitalizes our commitment to the original founding principles of the party, of libertarianism. I mean, when you talked about how they went through the platform, they deleted two planks, one calling for the abolition of the CIA, which is the most evil agency in history, the other one, the FBI. God. I mean, they must have been uncorking the champagne at FBI and CIA headquarters, because this was the one party that was standing against the national security state. And all of a sudden, the planks are gone. And that's why I keep saying is that we need a great awakening in this party that overwhelms the people that are advocating status reform, and that says, no, we're going to run a presidential campaign this time around that's going to be totally different. We're going to give the American people something they're not expecting, because we already know the results. If we do the same thing, it's going to be 0 to 1%. The polls are already stating that. If voter sentiment has not changed over the last 3 years, it's not going to change over the next 7 or 8 months. We need to do something completely different. And I say, let's run a campaign of pure principle, open borders, abolish Social Security and Medicare and the welfare state. Lead America to freedom. You indicated that. We've got to show faith in freedom and faith in voluntary charity, faith in free markets. You don't show that faith when you say, we've got to continue with this evil program called Social Security for 25 years, because otherwise people will be dying in the streets. Nobody's going to be dying in the streets. And when you have a conviction that freedom works, you don't doubt that. Everybody's going to be fine. For the truly needy, we've got children and grandchildren honoring mother and father and grandparents on a voluntary basis, especially since there'll be no more income tax or FICA taxes. You've got churches are filled with faith-filled people that are ready to help others out. The wealthy don't even need the money. The people in the middle might have to adjust, maybe get a part-time job. There's nothing wrong with that. But we've got to lead America in the restoration of faith in freedom, free markets, and voluntary charity. And then we're talking about leading a revolution out there, which is what we need to do. I'm in this for freedom, as you are. We're not going to get freedom with 1% or 0% of the vote. We need to break out to 10 to 15%. And I've contended from the beginning of this race that you can achieve that major breakout in only one way. A campaign of principle for the so-called party of
which
principle.
Has happened in Arizona.
I saw that constituency.
It happened. We already know. We've done it. Proved it.
Well, I saw it 20 years ago when I ran for Senate in Virginia. I ran the same kind of campaign of principle. People were mocking me in the party, ridiculing me. I was going to get 0.01, 0.02. I got 7% of the statewide vote, not 0.07, 7%, running against one of the most popular governors in the history of the state, John Warner. The Democrats didn't run anybody, but they were never going to vote for me. I'm calling for the repeal of Social Security, Medicare, public schooling. But I found there's a constituency out there that will vote for a libertarian package as long as it's the full package. They're not going to vote for immigration reform or Social Security reform. They will vote for the pure package. 7%, that's 20 years ago, Ernie. We've made a lot of progress in 20 years, and that's why I keep telling the party, if you want to double that to 10 to 15%, run a campaign of principle, because if you do the same thing you've been doing for 20 years, you're going to get 0 to 1%.
My first statewide race as Secretary of State in 94, I got over 7%, and I was running against Speaker of the House and President of the Senate. Don't tell me that you can't do it. You know, I just do some whip butt, and it kept going up from there. We have congressional candidates and local and everything. We'd fill the ballot, 30 come out with butt whipping, and they had to contend, and that is what the threat is. I've been waiting for this. We have a... trying to get this to low. We have a bandwidth thing going on, so there may be a delay between you and I. I apologize for that, but I wanted to play this into it. This is not the version that I have, but you get the idea. Here it is. It's only 37 seconds, okay? 37 seconds. Give this a listen.
You have this anti-system movement. What we are seeing is a revolution against the system. So fixing suppressant system is not enough. Now, there is, of course, a anti-system, which is called libertarianism, which means to tear down everything which creates some kind of influence of government into private lives. It's dismantling the system.
It's dismantling the system. Those damn libertarians want to dismantle the system. And they're dismantling the system. You know, I was like, what the crap? You know, I thought that was recent, and it wasn't. A listener on our Telegram, Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock Telegram, that'll be going away, you know, here directly, because we're going to bring everything in. But the they go, Ernie. That wasn't recent. That was, you know, years ago. That was before the pandemic. That was, you know, from a thing, you know, they knew we were the target from the beginning. And I'm going, all right. You know, at least they know. And then what did they had witnessing all this time when they did the lockdown thing, when they went after that? They want to keep us out of the private lives. They think we're wanting to, you know, tell people what to do with their private lives as they lock down and mandate and force and everything, inoculate and kill. You know, I'm going, wow. Who do they see as the threat? Jacob Hornberger. Because Jacob is the leading proponent for a no-compromise party of principle for decades and has been hammered on these guys forever. Well, Arizona, that's how we know Jacob and been friends for, because we made use of that. Every opportunity of anyone that would clearly articulate the reasons for that, whether you agreed with it or not, that wasn't the point. At least libertarians were consistent, certainly through the mouth and eyes of Jacob Hornberger.
The Shire Free Church offers a sanctuary to those seeking an escape from state churches.
The Shire Free Church is an interfaith, diverse group of people that may not share identical theological beliefs.
As a member in or minister of the Shire Free Church, you are a sovereign individual and may be the faith of your choice.
We don't claim to have all of the answers.
We are open to all peaceful people.
We want to learn from each other.
What unifies the Shire Free Church and its diverse members is peace,
love,
and liberty. There are many paths to God, one for every individual.
The Shire Free Church does not define a specific path beyond these parameters that must be your foundation.
Peace as your way.
Love as your guide.
And liberty as your light.
Learn more at church.shiresociety.com.
That's church. ShireSociety.com.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. Readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides an understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears is already matured.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. We're continuing our conversation with President of the United States candidate, Jacob Hornberger, for the Libertarian Party.
Because Jacob is the leading proponent for a no-compromise party of principle for decades and has been hammered on these guys forever. Well, Arizona, that's how we know Jacob and been friends for, because we made use of that. Every opportunity of anyone that would clearly articulate the reasons for this, whether you agreed with it or not, that wasn't the point. At least libertarians were consistent, certainly through the mouth and eyes of Jacob Hornberger. Now, this is when I felt I had a success. It's the later 90s. I remember when it was. It was when, what's his name? Johnson, the governor of New Mexico that ran.
Gary Johnson.
That. Yeah,
Gary Johnson.
Yeah, don't care. But, you know, Gary, I knew Gary, and they wanted me to be a state guy. And, you know, I was like, nah, you're not, you know, a little bit on taxes and a flatness or doing some crap that he did. You know, I can't play that. I need a Jacob. So he had come to Arizona and spoke. It was a border state thing. He, in the late 90s, I think it was, he had spoke at the Arizona House of Representatives. You know, they had the border governors. He had said something. He talked about decriminalizing drugs, you know, the ending the drug war. So then, of course, the reporter, oh, heavens to Murgatroyd, you know, this crap Ernie's saying, you know. So the reporter called me, and he read me a paragraph, or he had me quoted or whatever, and he goes, well, I got you saying yada, 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 yada. He goes, is that good? I go, yep, that's good. We're good. Boom, we're done. He already wrote what I was going to say. They know what I'm going to say. He just wanted to, you know, get me to say that's a quote and is that good? That's good. When you got reporters calling libertarians already knowing what you're going to say, you win. I was just like, thank God, we're finally at the point where you already know what we're going to say. So that's Jacob Hornberger. You already know what he's going to say. For him to answer, what's the question? Okay? And then you articulate that and you define that and what the reasons for it are. This is where we're at. And I wanted to make sure that you were encouraged to hold firm. Like, I'm not really worried that you're going to change. You got too much in writing. But it's important to me that you know that there are people out there that are in the streets on this, street activists, people that have faith in the future of freedom, the abundance that's coming. You know, this is going to overwhelm. And Klaus Schwab is correct. It is the anti-system people going to kick their butt. Then they have Javier Milei go to the World Economic Forum and tell them how much they suck. Okay? And then, this is the one thing, Jacob, this is cool. I'm waiting. He went and talked at CPAC. I'm like, yeah, whatever. You know, I don't want to suffer through the translation stuff. I'll watch it later. What they did a few days after he spoke at the World Economic Forum in Davos, artificial intelligence had in his voice syncing his lips in English. Have you seen that? That was freaking cool as crap. So I assume they're going to do the same thing again. So I'll wait and I'll go find the English translation AI. And it was done like 2 or 3 days later. It came up and it was called, you know, heyday.com. Anyway, it was the guys that did Snapchat created this AI to be able to do that. And I'm going, it's over. Why? Because that could be translated into Spanish, English, French, and Japanese. I don't know why they picked those languages, but that's what they have now. What happens when anything that you say, because you already speak fluent Spanish, you know, Jacob May, he talks Spanish. What happens when it's in Japanese, Chinese, Russian, and Nordic? You know, here we go, which is exactly what happened with the Philosophy of Liberty, that little animation, that International Society for Individual Liberty, which they changed the name to something else because it's ISIL and they made that unpopular. You know why? Because we did Philosophy of Liberty. We had it translated into Arabic. A guy in Moscow, we paid Ken Schoolin and I worked on this, $1,000, translated into Arabic, put the Philosophy of Liberty on thousands of DVDs, and when during Arab Spring, we had them dumped on Tahrir Square in Cairo. It went stupid all over the Arab world. So then the big game was, is, you know, ISIL was the thing. You go to ISIL page and ISIL, they go, oh, ISIL's bad. That ISIL, we created the ISIL of Islamic ISIL bad gun. They had to change their name. They changed. I go, I wouldn't have changed my name. Screw them. You know, this is how we have been activists worldwide on this, and with the technology to be able, we have a program called Language of Liberty. And it's a guy here, Glenn Kripe, that's a friend of ours, a wealthy guy that retired. He goes to Europe and he preaches libertarianism in English because it's called the language of liberty. Is English, Locke and the founding fathers and all that kind of stuff. And the second language of a lot of people, the young kids in Europe, is English anyway. But that is a penetration, which started the Arizona Project, where a lot of these young entrepreneurs come here and we interview them. Well, I'm looking at the technology is allowing for Jacob Hornberg to be translated in every freaking language, the Libertarian Party and all, and they're not doing it? How many times I got to do this to show you the impact of it to where I got Klaus Schwab bitching? It's faith in this, and that is why I support Jacob Hornberger. Because I need somebody with the vision, somebody with the faith, somebody that won't break. And got these broken party with these broken people is broken. I came back to Arizona. I started looking. All right. I knew the Libertarian Party had their January convention, so on. I missed that. But I went, all right, who's the guys? We kind of, we're back. I'm back. What are we going to? Nothing. Why? Principles aren't strong enough? Of course they are. Klaus Schwab knew what was his opposition was. Sorry to take up the time rant there, but I did. That's my feelings, man. How do you want to wrap this up? I want you to share with the audience your passion for this kind of stuff and give a demonstration of why I'm so supportive of you. Your faith in a future of freedom foundation. That's one thing. How did that start? All of a sudden, it's in the late 80s, early 90s where I want to do Future Freedom Foundation because why?
Well, first of all, I agree with you on the Schwab thing. It really goes to show you the threat that we're now posing to these people. For him to have to specifically bring out libertarianism as the threat to what he stands for is fantastic, because it shows you how much we've grown in influence. That they are really scared that this could sweep across the country and sweep across the world. And that's what I'm trying to do here inside the party. I keep saying, what we need to do, Ernie, is start wildfires. And this is a radical philosophy. There's no question about it. So, the party generally targets Republicans, middle class, well-to-do people. That class of people, the kind of people that attend LP conventions. But that group of people is generally not going to go with this radical philosophy. This is what Malay understood, is that you've got to target the people who are being crunched by the system, because the people who are like in the middle class, upper middle class, inflation's hurting them, but they're able to adjust. The people that are going paycheck to paycheck, they can't do this. We are their hope, the people that are barely making ends meet, the people that are dying on the border. I mean, we never should forget this. These are innocent people who are dying. We are their hope. The people that are suffering the ravages of the drug war. The drug war is the most racist government program since segregation. Every black in this country knows it, even though most whites don't realize it. Blacks get disproportionately higher jail sentences, get more stops. People along the border that are living under this police state, a lot of Americans don't realize how much hatred there is for the Border Patrol, and rightly so. That's where we need to be targeting our efforts and our message, is the people who are really getting crunched by this whole system. And then if wildfires start in those sectors, in the black community, in the Hispanic community, 50% of people don't vote. That's our target audience right there, 50% who don't vote. Because they know the whole system's crooked and corrupt. But you get a campaign of principle out there, those people will say, I'm going to go register and I'm going to vote for that guy. But they're not going to take that time to go vote for a reformer. They don't care about reform.
Agreed.
They want the dismantler. That's what they want, the dismantler of infringements on freedom. So I think libertarianism is the greatest philosophy, economic and political, ever in the history of mankind. But, Ernie, we need to fight as libertarians. We can't fight as Republican lights. We have to be true to ourselves. We have to be who we are. We were born libertarians, and we need to go into battle with our weapons, with our principles, and that's what I'm proposing in this campaign. Let's do it different. Let's go and fight these statists as libertarians.
So what is, do you think, is the reaction to success on that very point? Because I agree. Our market is people, we don't care. You know, never done. You're still voting. You know, I'm that way. I'm like, you're still voting? I don't trust a system to begin with, you know? So, but it's all of a sudden here in Arizona, it's amazing to me how every single thing I told, how they did it with the mail-in, with the computer, with I just detailed. That was my whole thing on my lawsuits against the election. 44 election laws I challenged all the way to the Ninth Circuit on exactly all this stuff that they had. Neon, I freaking told you so. That's my pronouns now, Jacob. I told you so. That's my pronouns. So, you know, this is, as it's coming, I'm like, I just let it go, man. You guys got figured out. Finally, you understand now? I'm like, all right, cool. Well, then what? Then what? You know, the people that you give them any kind of faith in, you know, the system, which they really don't want you to have faith, they get any kind of faith in actual voting. They do it in such a way with, I have purple fingers and paper counted at the precinct, you know, kind of thing. We have an enormous opportunity of the people that have been waiting for to have their voice actually count, and they want it to go to what? How about freedom? Freedom's the answer. What's the freaking question? And if we maintain our brand, we maintain the credibility of doing campaigns the way you're doing and the way we did for decades here in Arizona, if we maintain that credibility, it doesn't matter how small we are, because these things happen in spurts. It's explosions. It's all of a sudden, what the crap just happened? It happens that way every time. That's why they call it revolution. It just keeps coming around. The fourth turning to this, to that, whatever the heck you want to call it. When it's time, it's time. And we saw it's time with the Ron Paul revolution. In 08, when that campaign, I knew it was coming. I go, watch this. How did I know? I'm like, how did you not know? Well, that's a Jacob Hornberger thing. You know, this is going to, it's going to go, how did you know, Ernie? How did you not know? Sooner or later, there's going to be a group, instead of it just being a state, it's going to be a national thing, and what are they going to have to be in opposition to? They, them, those that will not leave us alone and got unlimited amounts of money to make sure it gets seated in right places, to make sure you got delegates that doing whatever and the promises of we'll give you a job if and you made and your mother-in-law, you know, will, you know, invite you over for Thanksgiving because you're not too radical or something. They're playing to something, our weaknesses, instead of our strength. America is about our strength. It's about our confidence and freedom. And if you don't have that, it's going to go away in 1,000 years of darkness. So I'm like, nope, the future is abundance, and it just takes inspirational people to demonstrate it's not that hard. It's a hologram that they created. It's a Potemkin village that they made. It's all fake. And if you just ignore it and blow through it, yeah, make me, and you know, and go protest in the street. We're going to go protest. I don't care about protest. You know, my protest, ignore them. That's my protest. You know, I don't care. You know, you just, you know, it's massive civil disobedience, which is really what the border thing is. That's just a bunch of massive civil disobedience. But it's not really, because they're invited by the Biden administration. Yeah, come on in. You know, tell your friends how much you got in, you know, visa. You know, I'm like, what the crap? What kind of people are you going to get? It's not the same kind as I grew up in the 70s and 80s. The people that came here to work, because that's the only way they could survive and eat. If you didn't work, you didn't live, you know? And they just kept getting more and more subsidies, more and more, you know, WIC. They had these, you know, for food and food stamps. And heck, oh, we'll just pay them, you know, give them a place to stay and some money every month. I'm like, what the crap? What do you think is going to happen? What do you think is going to happen? Of course it's going to happen. You know, I'm so done with reform. So done with incremental measures. So done with anything other than a total advocacy of unlimited, leave me aloneism, you're not bothering anybody, golden rule, non-aggression principle, freedom. And if there's nobody out there advocating for it, and I don't trust a voting system, why are you still voting? You still voting? Why? You got to live a freedom life. You got to ignore. You got to inspire. You got to create your own communities. I don't even like intentional community. I like unintentional community. This is my property line. Mine, mine, mine. Not yours, mine. You see over here? That's not mine. It might be yours or whatever, but this is mine. Mine, 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 mine. So what's the purpose of government? To protect that, which is mine, my individual rights. It's so but simple. Of course it's going to have opposition because it's so simple. They need collectivization, collectivization in your money, collectivization in your thoughts, collectivization in your action, collectivization in your children, collectivization in, you know, future security, you know, social security, education, you know, where your kids go, yeah, everything. Oh, and by the way, we're going to let the WHO decide when you got to get four shots. Whoa, well, hell, I'm free now, you know? So this is, before you go, I want you to go ahead and articulate what you think the future is. Not just including the election here in 24. What do you think you're seeing on the horizon? What may happen in libertarian? Because I haven't heard Libertarian Party about anything. The only time the word libertarian ever comes up is whether RFK Jr. is going to run as a libertarian. You know, that's the only time you ever even hear it. So I just want to know what you think the future is of this election and what you think the future is going to be for America and the world as we go into, oh, my God, you know, the dollar collapsing, which is coming. OK, so give your opinion, will you, Jacob?
Well, if we judge it from what's happened since, let's say, 1990, every year, things have gotten worse. I mean, there's no question. And freedom is plunged further into darkness. But there's always been one light shining through this darkness, and that's the light of libertarianism. And I mean, just imagine if there was no way out of all this morass, things would be totally dark. But there's totally. There's a light shining and brightening the darkness. That's libertarianism. But we don't know. You can't project the future based on the past because there can be a great awakening in this country. If we stay on this trajectory, we know things are going to be bad, much worse. So you got $34 trillion in debt, $80 trillion in Social Security and Medicare. You got the military, another $1 trillion, annual expenditures, the foreign wars. They're getting us close to nuclear war. So the verdict's still out as to the future, but things can turn on a dime. And that's why I keep saying the only way that things can turn on a dime is with principle. Principles are everything. If all you do is say, well, I'm going to reform this and I'm going to reform that, you're not going to stop the trajectory into darkness. You're just trying to make it more palatable, a nicer form of serfdom. So I think that we can turn things around. What are the prospects for this election? Well, I don't know. Between Biden and Trump, impossible to say. But we already know the results for the Libertarian Party presidential nominee. That's done. It's over. When the Wall Street Journal says that we get 1% right now, and then another poll says 0%, the American people they've spoken. They've said, we don't care how dissatisfied we are with Biden and Trump, we are not voting for you, by 99%. And I'm with them. I'm with the 99%. They're right not to vote for the standard Libertarian Party candidate that we've been running for 20 years because it's nothing but Republican light. It's reform. It's not freedom. So I'm saying this time around, if we want to lead America to freedom, you can do the same thing and get your 1% or 0.5% or 0%. That's fine. But if you want the chance of a major breakout, you have no choice. You've got to move in a totally different direction. It's just logical. And that total direction is a campaign of total principle. I mean, I was really impressed to hear you say you got 7% of the vote too, Ernie. I mean, this is what we've got to communicate to the party members, is that a campaign of principle is a vote getter. But as you point out, if it doesn't get the votes, at least you've been true to yourself. You've stuck with your principles. Let's say you get 1%. Okay, that's no fault of your own unless you've incompetently defended the message. It's the fault of the voters. It's their problem that they decided to reject this in favor of more darkness. But the only way that we can lead them out is through these principles. And if you get 1% and you've compromised your principles in the hopes of getting more votes, that's the disaster, because you've communicated to people things that are, you say are libertarianism, but they aren't really. They're just some warmed over Republican statism. And then you get 1% or 0.5% or 0%. That's a disaster. So I say the future is uncertain if we run a campaign of principle. We don't know. We know what we're going to do if we run the same kind of campaign we've been running for 20 years. The voters are already telling us that, 0 to 1%. If things haven't changed over the last 3 years, they're not going to change over the next 7 or 8 months. But if we run the kind of campaign that I'm running, I'm saying all bets are off. You don't know. If I could get 7% 20 years ago, I would say that's potentially possible to double that. We've made a lot of progress over 20 years. And if you're in the 10 to 15% area, now freedom is in play. You don't know what's going to happen then, especially if you got wildfires starting all over the country on immigration. And immigration is the best place to start a wildfire. I mean, you start light those embers that are burning in people all across the country that are horrified with the deaths and the suffering. And all of a sudden, that spreads into a wildfire along the border and then spreads into the black community over the drug war. And then into the 50% who don't vote. I think there's going to be a lot of people a little scared when they see those wildfires spreading. And that's what we need to do to shift the direction of this country.
You know, I'm looking at the, well, it's hard to read, you know, I'd show it, but you know, here are the results of 94. And what we had, Scott Granger ran for U.S. Senate. It was all 7-8%. You know, I think the lowest was like 6 for state. Scott Granger for Libertarian for U.S. Senate. You had all the congressional races. They were doing well. John Buttrick was running for governor at that time, Secretary of State. And you had to get 5%, which is like, oh, that's impossible. You'll never get 5% to have continuing ballot status and, you know, that kind of thing. Well, of course, for Buttrick, he was at 4.9 or something like that, made sure, you didn't make your 5%. So, of course, we do petition, signature, do it again next time. But it was from the beginning. I remember one time the results came. I was running for Congress in, I think it was 98. I was running for Congress against Shattuck, and it showed up 33% Ernest Hancock. We all looked at each other and go, yeah, right. The computers went down for like 20 minutes. Boom. Nope, that went away. You know, so I've been through this so many times. I don't care. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter because I know that the advocacy of the philosophy, and that's what's dangerous. When they find out that you don't care, it doesn't matter. It's a general public opinion campaign. It's like all my lawsuits. I don't think I one time in a dozen something lawsuits, I got a judge going, oh, hell, you explained it right, or oh, you win. Now, they always did a stay. They always go change the law a little bit, make it moot, jerk around. Nah, we rule you and get over it. I mean, blatant, obvious violations. Don't care. So for me, from early on, I could see it wasn't that I gave a crap what judge said. It was because you had a government number, the media and reporters that I knew, got to be friends with, could write about it. But they had to use adjectives. Tie-dye wearing, dope smoking, gun toting Ernest Hancock libertarian said this about that. Yeah, whatever. As long as you put the issue in there, don't care.
Hi, I'm Derek J. I don't want a politician to represent me. To me, government is the idea that one group of people can coerce everyone to comply with an edict or face increasing punishments up to and including death. Despite perhaps the most noble of intentions, the best government services are a far cry from what could be provided for by voluntary interactions. Besides, the people who call themselves the government wage wars and put peaceful people in jail for crimes involving no victims. If Starbucks used some of its money to drop bombs, I wouldn't shop there. So why would I support the American Empire? The Empire does not require my consent.
Derek J's Victimless Crime Spree. You can order your copy of the Director's Cut DVD now at victimlesscrimespree.com.
Welcome to Declare Your Independence on the Free Talk Live Network.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear here and declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock. We're continuing our conversation with Jacob Hornberger. He's candidate for President of the United States going for the Libertarian Party nomination. Now, I've known Jacob for a long time, since, 30 years, and he has been a big inspiration to me, and a lot of our advocacies and confidence in philosophy comes from him. Now, one thing that libertarians are often known for is open borders. Now, Jacob does not shy away from that, and he's very adamant in his articulation of that position and why. Maybe we can learn something. Your self-esteem. I feel bad. I need somebody. I need affirmation. Gosh darn it! I'm funny and I'm good looking and people like me. I mean, you know, that's what they're looking. That's what they play on, and that's how they control Trump. You know, it's an ego thing. Once you put that aside and you do what Jacob is doing, that it's not about Jacob. It's about the principles. It's about the future of abundance and the advocacy for individual being able to, you know, rise up from their own merits, a meritocracy, which you're going to start hearing that a lot more, because that is just good. Here it comes. So this is 24, I really hoped, especially in the morass of the crap that's going on, 24 could have been the year of the libertarian, and you don't hear anything. And that's one of the big reasons why I wanted to have you on. You're out there, and why? Why is there no consider? The only time I hear it is if when RFK Jr. went, and I'm going to run as an independent, I go, yeah, you think you are, because I know what it takes. You know, it is, you're going to spend, $30 million just getting on the ballot that they'll try and take you off of anyway. So this is for him to approach the libertarians and come to the convention. Pick me. I'll give you a lot of press. There's a lot of people that are going to go, okay, we'll get some coverage. Yay. They'll raise some money. Yay. And kill America's best chance. So what do you think about that? Was there serious conversations about RFK running as a libertarian?
Yeah, and I just got back from the California Libertarian Party, where the California Party featured him in the convention debate. They structured this thing so that only two of the Libertarian Party presidential candidates could be in the main debate before the convention, and then the rest had to be in a debate after the end of the convention on Sunday evening. So on the main convention debate, they limited it to two candidates plus Robert F. Kennedy Jr. And I don't think there's any doubt that he's running into ballot access problems. He says he isn't, but it's nice to see him hoisted on his own petard, because when he was running with the Democrats, he never condemned ballot access barriers. Why should he? Now he's being hoisted on his own petard, but I think that in the end, he may try to rent the party, and there's people inside the party that would love to rent it to him in return for vote totals and ballot access and so forth. But if they did that, I think it would spell the end of the Libertarian Party, because
certainly
everybody
the way
would
it is
have
now.
Known what they did. They would be, well, it'd be a laughing stock, you know. Oh, we got 20% of the vote. Yeah, with a welfare state loving, gun grabbing liberal Democrat who's praised communist Cuba and communist China. That's how you got your big vote total. So I cannot imagine him being the nominee. I could imagine him seeking the nomination if he can't get on the ballot in enough states and trying to rent the party for that purpose. But I just find it very hard to believe that the party would go that far in terms of abandonment of principle just to get vote totals up.
All I got to do is somebody show up with a check. That's how that happens. So go ahead and, you know, give us a future. 10 years? You know, a while. I mean, you know, what are we looking at by 2030 and the agenda of 2030, agenda of we're going to take over America, agenda of the middle class is the threat, agenda we don't have a middle class anymore, agenda. I mean, you know, whatever the heck it is, that, you know, the what's going to happen to the dollar, international trade, is freedom going to resurrect itself on a crypto? Are they going to do central bank digital currency and social credit score? Have you got your shot? I mean, how far does this have to go before it's like massive non-compliance of kiss my butt of even, because they always got to have a war. And if a civil war, they got this movie coming out in May, Civil War. What kind of American are you? I mean, what? You know, I remember when this started in 19 with the movie Joker with Joaquin Phoenix, and they're going to resurrect and have another one. And it was a friend of mine and I, Bob, we went there, we were in Massachusetts, and we were watching, yeah, let's go see that movie. Well, I'm like, what the crap was that? It was Antifa, BLM in the streets, Portland, you know, predictive programming movie. And I was like, this is, it's intentional. It's intentional. It's intentional. It's intentional. And it's always that one person that won't go sit in the back of the bus. It's Kyle Rittenhouse. You know, it's you know, little young guys, you know, idealistic kind of, I'm not compromising, whatever, and I'm not going to let this guy kill me. Pedophile. I mean, you know, it's just so stupid. It only takes a little bit of opposition, a little bit of inspiration to set a standard for everybody else. The future, do you think there's going to be more of that or less? They're going to squash it out. They're going to shoot it out. They're going to eliminate it, put you in jail, Navalny. I mean, you know, what do you think is going to happen over the next 4 years after 24? Because it doesn't really matter what happens, who gets in 24. What's going to happen is going to happen. So we're going to be war. We're going to be, you know, come together as Americans under principle. Is it going to be some state, you know, Arizona, Texas, Florida, something's going to be, you know, bite me, Texas secede? I mean, give me some off the wall kind of what you think that somebody else wouldn't notice. What do you think, man?
Well, I think if we stay on the trajectory we're on, it's going to be really bad with respect to freedom. It's going to get worse in terms of economic crises, fiscal crises. I don't think there's any question about that. Your point about people resisting, I don't buy that at all. I think this is a very weak nation. We got the most powerful government in history and the weakest nation. You got people that are dependent on Social Security. Notice that all the anti-war protesters from the 60s, they're quiet as church mouse now because they're scared of losing their largesse, their Social Security and their Medicare. This is what welfare does to a system, to a society. It makes people weak, dependent. There's no sense of self-reliance and independence that characterized our 19th century ancestors. So the people that resist, like you and me and whatever, are few and far between. So I think if we stay on this trajectory, very, very for people like you and me, and then, but I also have never wavered in my conviction that freedom is possible in my lifetime, in your lifetime. Things can turn on a dime, as I said earlier. There have been great awakenings in history. And what our job as libertarians, and this is why I keep saying we've got to return to our principles, that our job is to cause that awakening, like my awakening when I discovered libertarianism, as I told you at the beginning of this show, that it was powerful, uncompromising principles that broke through this indoctrination. And so if we're going to stop this trajectory, and I think it's entirely possible to turn things completely around, I think this is why this Schwab is scared, that he understands that this could happen, that there's a great awakening, especially among people in the Christian community, that realize the welfare state and the warfare state violate Christian principles. Now you're talking about a completely different change in directions. For example, in this immigration, before I forget, Ernie, I'd like to tell you about this new book, or just mention this new book called The Case for Open Borders by a guy named John Washington. He lives in Tucson. It just came out about a couple of weeks ago. This is the best book on immigration I think I've ever read, maybe subject to our book, The Case for Free Trade and Open Immigration, that I co-edited. But this book is fantastic. If every American were to read this book, The Case for Open Borders by John Washington, we'd be having a new trajectory in this country. So to answer your question, the verdict's out as to what's going to happen over the next 4 years. I think the Libertarian Party could play a major role in igniting all these wildfires on immigration, open borders, abolishing socialism, dismantling the welfare state, the warfare state. We haven't even talked about the national security state, the Pentagon, the CIA, the NSA, all the state-sponsored assassinations, the invasions, occupations. The Libertarian Party can lead the way out of this morass, but not through reform. The only way it's going to happen is by restoring the founding principles of this party and the founding brand of this party.
Meat axe, big giant cleaver, lop it off. You know, that was one thing that I really liked about Javier Milei. He would, during the campaign, it'd be like last October or something like that, he had this big whiteboard, a magnetic whiteboard, and it had across, I think it was like in yellow, it had representations of each of the departments. And he'd go up and he goes, "Gone, gone, 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 gone." And I'm like, you know, yeah, we'll see if he really does it. So this is, whether Javier is one of they, them, those in disguise or whatever, is not even the point. The point is that he tapped into a demonstration of what people really want. I mean, he rode that freedom-oriented mindset to victory. You know what? Well, we can't do that. You know what it takes? So then you get the guys that got money to do it, like Trump, and they're trying to, you know, $300 million for financing on it. I mean, just stupid stuff. You know, this is the point that I want to make. This is how, you know, I think it's playing out. It costs, what, $1-2 billion for a presidential campaign now? I mean, do you have any idea? I mean, it's a lot, okay? So this is for Trump to go in, doesn't spend any money. He does his Truth Social thing that may go public. He may make billions of dollars on that. Then you have $300-something million he's supposed to pay because some judge said, and there's going to be other millions, and $85 million to what's her name, and million. They're indicting him and suing him into office. You know, it's going to be, he getting so much press and so much coverage and so much support from a lot of people, go MAGA, you know, because Republicans hate him, the Democrats hate him, heck, the media hates him, you know, heck, that's endorsement as far as we're concerned. So he's going to be indicted in at a discount. You know, it's like, you know, billion, I don't need to spend a billion, I just got to pay off half a billion, I got 50% off, I get to be president. Oh, it's in that mindset. It's the people. Do we ever really have a say? It's general public opinion, it always has been. If the Libertarian Party understood the power of the philosophy, of the consistency of the philosophy, of the reason, but the humanity of it, you know, the how, what would Christ do? You know, what would Thomas Jefferson do? What would our founding father, you know, the even the Federalists and the Anti-Federalists, everything that the Anti-Federalists said was going to happen, has happened. So we got to go back to what, you know, we got to understand why America became such a superpower from nothing. We weren't an empire. We didn't have it. It was just from the effort, the sweat of the brow of individual people. A philosophy, a future of abundance, that charity started at home, that we are a compassionate people. Because what are we up against? You create a shiny badge, you create a collectivized power of something with a shiny badge and a position of, who wants that? Scumbags, sociopaths, psychopaths, they want to do it. And rarely do you get an opportunity to have an opportunity to support someone like Jacob Hornberger that's not in it for that, that have set aside so many other things. You could, he's an attorney. You know, he has a Future Freedom Foundation. I mean, he could go on, use his brain, and take care of and have a nice life of whatever. But he's so committed to freedom, the Future of Freedom Foundation that starts in 1990, and you're going, why would he do, what drives this person? You know, he's a man of faith. Not just in God, but in freedom. I emphasize Jacob because he's such a beacon and an inspiration to me that to have an opportunity to support the vote, I don't give a crap if it's half a percent of none percent or if I don't even vote. It's I vote when I put up a sign. I vote when I have him come on the show. I vote when I put him up on the site. I vote when, you know, so many times I've supported Jacob Hornberger. He comes and speaks at the Freedom Summit. Why? Because I need to demonstrate that these people even exist, that the opportunity is there. And it's up to guys like Klaus Schwab on an international, global, universal level of go, that is their threat. And you're damn skippy it is. But sooner or later, you get into an Argentina position that things are so bad that the only solution is an abandonment of all the systems. An anti-collectivized system guy, Jacob Hornberger. Jacob, thanks for coming on, man. Give your final message to the audience before we let you go, because I, you bring out the passion in me and articulate this, and you're such an example. I can't say these things with this much passion without having someone like you to demonstrate that it's possible. That you're in opposition, not only to they, them, those, but inside the Libertarian Party. You think they, them, those are going to ignore the Libertarian Party? It's the biggest threat. So says Klaus Schwab. You see my point?
I see your point perfectly, and thank you very much for the nice words. And the feeling's mutual. You inspire me every time I come on the show. My batteries get recharged for especially going to more conventions every weekend. I'm heading off to 3 conventions this weekend. You know, Ernie, we are the hope for mankind. I mean, there's just no question. We're the lighthouse that is showing the way to people. And for all too long, we've been taught that our principles are albatrosses, they're liabilities, they cost us votes. Pure nonsense. Our principles are our greatest asset. And if we stick with our principles, especially like on immigration, imagine all along the border, all the 10%, let's say, if that's the number of people that favor open borders. I mean, you don't need a large amount of money because the word will spread like wildfire. Hay un candidato que favorece fronteras abiertas. And they'll be picking up their cell phone saying there's a candidate out there that's calling for open borders. Spread the word. And all of a sudden, you've got this wildfire going on. But that's where our principles come in. And this is, I can't emphasize this too much, that it's libertarianism is an exciting philosophy. Reform is boring. When you run a campaign based on Social Security reform, immigration reforms, educational reform, healthcare reform, I go to sleep. But who's going to go to the barricades for that kind of message? Can you imagine, Ernie, somebody saying, hey, Ernie, get your AR-15. We're going to the barricades. Well, what for? What are we doing? Oh, we're going to fight for freedom 25 years from now because we got a plan to abolish socialism 25 years from now. It ain't going to happen. You go to the barricades because people are saying we're going for freedom. And that's what we got to restore in this party and in this movement, that our principles are the way out of this darkness. This is the way we lead the world to the highest reaches of freedom that mankind has ever seen.
I have
Thank
faith.
You for having me on.
I have faith in the philosophy, and Jacob had a great role in articulating it for a lot of us young activists in the early 90s, that we took that along with other uncompromisers like L. Neil Smith and other people like Rick Tompkins here, you know, is a good friend and state chair. And there was just a small influential, I'd say like half a dozen people. You know, John Buttrick, that retired as a federal judge. I mean, you know, he was a hardcore Harvard law grad, summa cum laude, super law firm of, and articulated this stuff well. There's always these people that had, I already understood it just from reading, you know, the Declaration of Independence really had a big impact on me. All right, what the heck is going on? I came out from economics, and it's a long story, but, you know, I come in, I start, what the crap? And it took 2-3 years before I came across my first libertarian. And they started, I'm going, whoa, what the crap is that? Where's this been all my life? And everything has been about suppressing this philosophy because it is what America was made so great on. And it can be again. It's going to crash. It's going to burn. Because it can't not. But that's what Freedom's Phoenix was about. In 96, we came up with that. From the ashes of Lady Liberty's torch, Freedom's rebirth, Freedom's Phoenix. But you got to go through the ashes. And how do you do that? With faith, with the armor of principle, with an understanding of what can be, with the promise of abundance. Just leave the aloneism and we'll be fine. Fine, better than fine, and a light as we have been in the past to the world. So this is what I'm counting on, and I'm counting on Jacob to please just keep doing what you're doing, stay in the fight, don't compromise. And you might use that Klaus Schwab piece in your next thing going, see, this is what we're afraid of. Yeah, so that worked out. Thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate you. I love you. Thanks for being there. This has been awesome. I feel a lot better now. I got to purge myself.
All right. Thank you, Ernie. It's always an honor and a pleasure. And thanks for all your nice words. And
well, where's
support.
Your campaign site? You know, is there a campaign website they should go to?
Yeah, yeah. Jacobforliberty.com. And in fact, today I'm getting ready to post. I post all the videos of the debates. I think people would really enjoy watching them. And I'm getting ready to post a debate in Missouri and the debate in California that I participated in. That was the post-convention debate, not the main debate on the main stage before the convention. So, and then plus a lot of the talks I'm giving, everything's up there at jacobforliberty.com. And I would invite people to come and visit us. And if you're able to help us out with a donation, that would be great. I'd be honored and appreciative.
Yeah, you know, that's one thing. Yeah, blah, 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 vote, don't vote. I don't give a crap. Go donate. You know, just give $5. You know, throw something, put your name on the, you want to be on the list? Be on top of the list. It's safer there. You know, go get on top of the list, you know, against the man and go donate a little bit to Jacob for me. I mean, you can give me money. That's always good. But today, go do it for Jacob. Because I just want to, you got to encourage this stuff. You got to be supportive of this. You got to give a light. You know, I'm going to do it right now. Gosh darn it. All right. All right, we're in the process of donating. I get it taken care of. You know, thank you very much, Jacob. It's always awesome to talk to you. You got some great news of whatever the heck. Let me know, okay?
Will do. Thank you so much, Ernie. I can't thank you enough. But I'm honored and appreciative.
Thank you
great
very
show.
Much.
Enjoyed it.
Me too. Peace, brother.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Welcome back, welcome back, welcome back to Declare Your Independence of me, Ernest Hancock. That was a great interview with Jacob Hornberger. He's the founder of the Future of Freedom Foundation, FFF.org, and candidate for President of the United States of America as a libertarian, a no compromise. I wanted to make sure you got exposed to that because I endorse Jacob, anything that he does, because I know he's consistent. Well, we got a little bit of extra time, and I wanted to we'll do a little bit. You get a 20 minutes or so of a conversation with a good friend, Mr. Robert Anderson. I'm sure you'll enjoy. Interview 1866. You know, this is James Corbett has this up. New French law could criminalize jab resistance. That is exactly what the thing I was most afraid of and why I wanted to do the Love Bus Liberty tour. It was, I could see that they were going, it was going to be vaccine mandates. We could see this.
Oh, they tried.
2009.
They tried.
Oh, they're trying. Well, now they're saying, well, you don't get your life insurance benefit because it's an experimental drug and nobody made you do it. It wasn't mandate. It wasn't a jackboot on your neck holding you down, shooting you up. It was just you couldn't get out of your house, couldn't go anywhere, couldn't do anything, couldn't buy anything. You know, kind of. But nobody made you. You could have gone, died in the ditch somewhere by yourself.
And then we'd have paid you.
And, right. But the and you get a Krispy Kreme donut. But so now they're doing around the world. And in fact, I guess France is starting this. Welcome to New World Next Week, the video series from Corbett Report, Media Monarchy with James Evan Pilato. And they're covering this. And I haven't watched it yet. We just got it up.
I wonder how that's going to play with the French's version of the Second Amendment. Oh, that's right. They don't have
yeah,
one.
Yeah, I'm like, what Second Amendment?
Well, yeah, that, which is why they have mandates.
You know, I had the yellow vest guy on a couple weeks ago. He's been texting me, you know, different things that's going on in Europe. And I wanted to ask if he knew anything about the tractor. The European Union got run over by a tractor. I mean, you know, that kind of thing. And, yep, you know, it's all part of the yellow vest is kind of its own little movement. And they got and they, like, protested and they, you know, dial a protest people.
Yeah, you're hardly hearing about what's going on in Europe. The farmers all over Europe are in major revolt. I mean, and you're catching very little of it. I mean, in Germany, they're swarming the streets. They're swarming the streets in Greece. You know, they just got through with the whole Brussels and, you know, a bunch of their EU Union stuff was up there. And, you know, and you're hearing very little of it here because the last thing they want to do is instigate the truckers and farmers over here to go, oh, yeah, hold my beer.
Yeah, you know, this is it's been interesting that we have.
Did you see Trump just made a big Teamsters union thing?
Yeah, I saw the Teamsters union is endorsing him now or something.
Yeah, and they just donated a bunch of money, I think. So he had some meeting with the Teamsters, and apparently it's, you know, they're typically hardcore Democrat. Well, they're backing Trump.
Yeah, but I wonder what he had that. See, this was the concern I had, you know, dealing with Frank, you know, on this. I go, he's a negotiator. It's like a deal. Maybe he's a Republican, you know. And he's all about art of the deal. And I don't want my rights being negotiated away. And I go, well, how much is he going to negotiate away? Then he does this bump stock thing. You know, that was just stupid. Who the hell is he listening to? So it's, I'm afraid when he's negotiating with the Teamsters, what did he promise them? You know?
Gas prices. He wants to get the diesel prices down, and he's probably also talking about trade from Mexico and the Mexican truck drivers and, you know, open border. You know, all that stuff is that those are things that I'm sure he can make concessions. Not that I want to make concessions to the union, but, you know, it's politics. You got to make a deal.
Politics. You know, that's one thing. You know, I talked with Ron Paul. I was in Washington in like 10 or something like that. I was back there for something. And he just, you know, what's up? You know, stop by. You got time, you know, for me to come by and say, hey, yeah, you know, come at, you know, whatever. And I get like a half hour. We got to hang. And go to his office and sit out there. And there was a Campaign for Liberty thing had been going. And they started for the 2010 election cycle after 08. They were endorsing certain Republicans for office that normally libertarians, we were like, that scumbag piece of crap that voted for the Iraq war that did. So it was kind of the Campaign for Liberty, which really wasn't Ron Paul, but it was a political, they were trying to use the energy of the Levolution and direct it, right. You know, and charge it $35 to be told what to do, you know? And I'm like, this, I can't have anything to do with this. So they went to a special meeting, brought me to Washington, you know, like a couple of years before to try and, it was like March, April of 08 before he had pulled out. And they go, well, we need you to do that. I go, no, hell no. You're just another collective.
Sorry, I'm a man of principle. A man of principle, yeah, we can't have you anywhere near us.
Right.
you got principles.
But Ron understood. But by that time, you know, it kind of gets out of his hands. You know, once you get this gazillion dollar big and all your supporters of doing, they got plans, man. They're going to, you know, we're going to save America. We're going to.
The organization becomes more important than what it was founded for.
Exactly. You know, so I knew that, I don't think this is going to go well. When it really started to implode, when I went to his office, you know, said, oh, hey, Ernie, oh, you know, it was kind of like, you know, what are you doing? I'm kind of like, well, I mean, you know, I didn't expect to get a hero's welcome or anything, but I don't know, be hairy eyeball the whole time. I was like, what the heck? So I just kind of, you know, I didn't really, you know, they're busy, you know, whatever. Go in, and it became clear the backlash that they got for some, there was some Colorado or Utah, I think it was Colorado, somebody that they endorsed through the Campaign for Liberty that was kind of the Ron Paul thing, but he really wanted the Ron Paul Institute and his show, the Ron Paul Liberty show. You know, that's really what Ron wanted. What they wanted was, you know, the political machine that they could do something with, be Republican or something. And so he wasn't, you know, he didn't blame me as much as, you know, probably other people. But it was clear that there was backlash, and they thought that I kind of instigated. I mean, don't shoot the messenger. I just predicted you're not going to get these people that set aside their lives for a year and a half, you know, go be principal, do what they wanted to do. Say, oh, by the way, now you owe us $35 a month, and we're going to tell you what to do. And I'm going, no, that who even thought up that?
Yeah, vast majority of these people are just against you as much as they were against those guys.
Yeah, I was so. We got the yak it for, you know, so-and-so says hi, so-and-so wants you to sign this book, so-and-so, I kind of got, you know, stuff done in like 3 minutes of, you know, passing messages and so on. And then we got the yak it, and I go, look, I just need to know what I can depend on. You know, what is it, you know, I just, what's the plan here? And he goes, three things. The words that come out of my mouth, this is Ron Paul, the words that come out of my mouth, that is, you know, my words. You see me saying it, that's me, okay? The votes that I do, that's me. I vote. You see my vote, I voted for that because I voted for that because I voted, okay? So he goes, that, you can count on that. And then he said, the rest is just politics, you know? He goes, and the rest is politics. And I'm going, whoa, there's a lot of rest. Yeah. You know, and this is so I'm like, you're still voting. I just can't count on this kind of process.
Voting is not going to help you when the cities start to burn and they're at your door, right, and you're worried about your kids and your wife and, you know, whether they're going to come through it unscarred or fed. You know, those are the things you need to be focusing on because these people do not care about you. You're nothing but cattle. And if you aren't taking care of yourself, you're way behind the curve.
Well, this story, while we are witnessing in the Democrats' administration of justice, the Democrats appear to be the new Stalinist party. My conclusion is based on how they abuse law. President Trump has suffered 8 years of legal abuse from Democrats and their corrupt prosecutors and judges. It began with Russiagate, led by saying on and on and on. He goes on about it. This is Paul Craig Roberts, which was in, I think, in the Reagan administration. You know, he's one of the cabinet guys doing whatever, and he has his own website and so on. We put on, and it's not necessarily, I agree, he's trying to push towards certain things that he wants and whatever, but it really doesn't matter because I publish his stuff because of the perspective that he has. He was in the administrations. He knows, you know, what's being done. And this, what's happening to Trump, is unprecedented. I'm sure they've done this kind of...
At least in modern times.
Yeah, at least freaking out in the open and, oh, my God.
It's pretty blatant that, you know, I mean, they're not even remotely trying to sugarcoat it. Because they believe that their half of the team they want him to be brutalized in public and dragged through the mud, and whether it's fair or not, it's because he ain't on our team. You know, he's the quarterback for the other team, so, you know, if we can sack him, so be it.
Even though they find that Trump can take this, you know, which I don't know another human being on the planet that could survive the level of what they've done to him. I got to give the boy props for that.
Yeah, no, he's the kind of guy that every time you
bring
you poke him, he gets back up, and he gets back up harder, and he gets back up stronger. And so the best thing they could have done was trying to ignore the crap out of him.
Right.
But the fact that it's been 4 years of Trump, and, you know, all this, you know, you say, $385 million, I go, he's getting that in advertising. You know, and then he's going to sell his Truth Social for, or take it public for, billions of dollars. So why, you know, I'm sure he doesn't enjoy having $385 million poke in the eye. He's going to come through it, and it's just going to piss him off.
Yeah, he's going to...
He's going to get his.
Back up your 18-wheeler of lemons. I'll show you how to make lemonade.
Yeah, you know, because they already said, oh, we'll just take his properties. They take Trump Tower. Oh, yeah,
Them's fight words.
Oh, yeah, he's, you know, and they better understand You know, I mean, not that I condone the political vengeance, but, you know, there's going to be a certain amount of sitting back out here in Tonopah sipping on a, you know, a cold brew around the campfire where I'm going to get a little smile as I start seeing some of these people getting their comeuppance. You know,
yeah,
I,
but I'm
I
wondering,
hate to see government have that power, but damn it, there's going to be a certain amount of enjoyment of seeing
some
retribution.
Well, see, this is exactly what triggered me with Frank. Is we got to go after them and get them with their own kind of. Once you go down that road, forever will it dominate your path.
And they're going to go down that road.
You know, so this is the kind of stories we see in Latin America. This is, you know, anytime any opposition comes up, they get assassinated. Anytime you have somebody do something, they arrest them. Anytime, I mean, it's just...
if they use the... I shouldn't say use the process. You know, some of these people have definitely done criminal actions, and they need to be held accountable. This won't stop unless they get dragged in front of the, you know, dragged to the guillotine or dragged to the gallows
for
what
they've
done. But
they got to be, you know, pure enough not to get dragged down with it because they're doing the same thing. A lot of these times when you, they did that, whatever they accuse, they're doing.
Which is why I would say I wouldn't prosecute anybody, but I'd make them all talk. Put it out in
that
front of the American people and do it in the middle of a stadium. You know, you want transparency? We're going to do it in Madison Square Garden in front of big screen TVs, and we're just going to have, you know, months of testimony.
Immediate AI translated into all languages.
And anybody who lies, we're going to hammer you with the biggest club we can find. As long as you tell the truth, everybody walks, but the truth's going to come out.
Nah, they shoot them.
Yeah, whatever.
There'd be like machine guns.
Whatever. But
CIA agents would be standing at the door with their Tommies.
First person that lies.
Weeks after meeting between former President Donald Trump and, you know, that's one thing right there. You know, they say former or they, you know, they always put in quotes former or really current president or the real president, or they say President Donald Trump. I see more often than not, it must be the stories that I get or sent to me and stuff, is that they won't acknowledge that he didn't win. You know, it's kind of, you know, which is, I think it's kind of cool. I just, you know, you keep the faith, man. Go for it. Former President Donald Trump and Teamsters Union leaders, including President Sean O'Brien and Secretary Treasurer Fred Zuckerman, along with the union's executive board at their Washington, D.C. headquarters, America's most powerful labor union, has made the first major donation to Republicans in two decades. God, what does that put? You know, so I was
back at the turn of the century.
Baby Bush or something. Yeah. You know, why were they giving him any money? This move has sparked huge concern that unions are losing faith with President Biden, lauded as the most pro-union president ever. According to Axios, the Teamsters Political Committee donated $45,000, which is nothing, but, you know, the maximum amount permitted. Oh. So Teamsters PAC.
Yeah, but they got, like, you know, PAC 1, PAC 2, the individual donations,
whatever.
Yeah,
no, they got a bunch of the
union
members and so on. I'm just wondering, there's a maximum. Since when the hell do they have maximums? Well, they're going to do what they want anyway. To the Republican National Committee, this was the first big donation the union has made to the RNC since 2004. That's the RNC. That's not a particular candidate. That's to Republicans in general. So that $45,000 bought them a gazillion dollars worth of marketing here.
Yeah, and I'm sure that wasn't, you know, Trump didn't go to all the way to sit down with this guy for a $45,000 or what was it, $45 million or $45,000? $45,000. That ain't nothing. There were other deals done, I'm sure.
Well, it says here that, you know, there's a strong possibility that Trump himself may get their endorsement.
Yeah, well, I think
so. He's trying to get the endorsement. I don't know what he's doing to get it. I'd like to know.
Yeah,
but
what Biden has done to the trucking industry, you know, I mean, a lot of these guys can't make ends meet hardly, and, you know, the price of diesel has come down a little bit from where it was, but it's, you know, it's still expensive, and I still say the truckers, you know, they're slowly but surely realizing, you know, with watching what's going on in Europe and what happened in Canada and all that. If after the 2020 election,
right,
if the truckers had just all pulled over to the side of the road, turned the key to off and go, we ain't turning the trucks back on till this is fixed, it'd have been fixed in a week.
They would have been. What got fixed?
The election. If the truckers had just all go, bullshit, we know
he won. It's not broken, it's fixed.
Yeah, but I mean, if the truckers as citizens had all just said, we know this is bullshit and it's going to get fixed. They just pulled over the side of the road and turned the trucks off. They wouldn't have had to, you know, because they don't know what to do with this. What are you going to do when the truckers, they're not doing anything.
They are.
They're
powerful.
Doing nothing.
And I don't even think the Teamsters is really representative of a lot of the truck. They're independent truckers.
A lot of independent truckers.
You know, this New York, we're not going to New York thing. This is the Teamsters trying to jump on the bandwagon that the independent truckers have already created.
Yeah, the independent truckers are the ones that are really, that move the country as much. You know, the...
So he's going, Trump is like, you know, continued adding he was in a greater position than other Republicans and that the union never had it better 4 years than they had during the Trump administration, which is probably true.
Probably true.
You know, so they
he was getting rid of a lot of the regulations. These guys are all scared to death with what's going on in California because the port over there.
Only allows electric trucks.
They're gonna, anybody after a certain year, your truck has to be electric, or you can't, you know, work in California. Which I still don't know how they're going to do that because the Interstate Commerce Clause kind of dictates what goes on with commerce, not the state. But we'll see how that all plays out. Now they might be the truck can't get off the freeway. I don't know how they're going to deal with that. But so these guys, you know, they their livelihood is, you know, on the line. So
there's a lot of. You'll see on Freedom's Phoenix, we had put up several... Well, let me finish this and I'll tell you about the hydrogen thing. Let's see. Before January, Teamsters donated this much to Democratic, 135,000 Democratic National Committee. The DNC also received 15,000 from the union in March. Teamsters represent about 1.3 million UPS and other transportation workers. Oh, UPS went Teamsters? Despite many other unions having... Hell, that's probably all they have. You know, despite many other unions having already endorsed Biden, Teamsters has yet to endorse a candidate in 24 presidential race. Trump's and Biden's campaigns are locked in a fight to win over blue collar, yada, 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 yada. So, they're doing that. What you see a lot on Freedom's Phoenix is you'll see whenever I see things or even go look at times on hydrogen. Now they found we got underground. We have unlimited, you know, hydrogen. We found hydrogen.
Was that hydrogen or helium? I didn't read the article.
It's hydrogen.
Oh, okay.
And I'm going, how the heck does hydrogen even do that?
Well, you know, remember we ran into that guy. They were mining helium up on the rim. They're doing the same thing. You know, there's pockets of gas down there that.
Well, I'm wondering, hydrogen, I didn't think it would, maybe it's an accumulate something, whatever. So anyway, they find a bunch of hydrogen. Then they find another way to transport it. You know, they put it in ammonia, you can crack it easy, or they do whatever. It's a hydrogen thing. So it's been to make hydrogen by cracking water or other processes, you spend more energy
then
getting
get
the hydrogen than you get out of it.
Yeah, all so you're doing, dumb. You're expending energy to make it easily transportable. Or transportable.
Or to use it or something. But then you can do it locally. You have a solar fields, we've got plenty here, that are cracking it, and you store it and make a gas station out of your solar panels. You're better off if you just charge the battery to do it or run it direct. But if you're wanting to make hydrogen portable, Bob, you had a revelation or a great idea or... exposed me to something I didn't even think about is that because of Palo Verde here, it wasn't it originally supposed to be 12 plants?
Yeah, it was something. It was supposed to be a big circle around the switchyard, and then they went from like 12 to 5. And I think they actually had the license for 5, but they only built 3.
Why?
Because it was right around the time when they were having Three Mile Island and nuclear was not, you know, it wasn't hip anymore. And they were having cost overruns and, you know, it was billions of dollars. And remember they had Washington Power Supply, whoops, whatever it was, and they had a bunch of those guys go bankrupt. It was a bad day for the nuclear industry, or it was a bad time for nuclear industry. They barely got those plants online. They almost didn't come online. They were very close to closing up shop and going by the way of some of the whoops plants.
Why?
It was just
cost.
Delays and cost, yeah.
Was it intentional or is it just regulatory?
Probably. I wasn't steeped in it enough because I had just gotten out of the Navy when it was all happening. And a lot of it happened when I was in the Navy, the delays and all that stuff. So I wasn't steeped in all the rhetoric that was going on about
it. So when was it?
But it was mostly just regulatory. You know, there was a lot of changes. TMI happened, so the industry came back and said, anybody building, Three Mile Island, anybody who's building a nuclear plant, you need to do this, 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 and this as retrofits so that we can, you know, make sure that don't happen again because that was bad. And so there was a lot of delay and cost in those, you know, those.
What year was it went online?
Let's see. I started in probably around 84, I think.
Because I remember, and I was in high school, it was 78. I went down to Mexico to photograph the barge coming in because they had to go through the Panama Canal. They couldn't, the big steam turbine.
Well, I actually started out there in 84, and I'm pretty sure one of the plants had just gone online that year. So
they were building, they were bringing in the steam engines from Mississippi or something. They had to go down the Mississippi to Panama Canal and up the Gulf of California and the Rocky Point. And we had friends that in high school that were there, photographers, and we went down and we had the only pictures because it was stormy and it was like 2 weeks and all the other media left and we stayed. So we, and they let us on. We got all kinds of great pictures. We sold to the Arizona Republic. So we, you know, were the photographers for that because we, you know, a friend of mine was from down there and we went down and had a good time. Bunch of young kids getting sold vodka by, you know, a 7-year-old on the beach. I mean, we're like, woohoo, you know.
Sounds like freedom.
Homemade fireworks. And so I remember that. And then that, so that was like 5, 6 years, 7 years before. So it takes like a decade, you know, or something longer to do these.
Yeah, no, they takes, that's why, you know, nobody just sits there and poops out a nuclear plant or even a conventional plant. I mean, it's like you can build a gas
turbine.
They
are now.
Plant.
They're doing the freaking small little, put it in the back of a tractor trailer, haul it off to, you know, a city neighborhood of I Got Power, my factory.
Yeah, I've read stories about them. I've yet to see one.
Oh, shut up. They do. They have.
I have yet to see one.
They have these. The Russians have these barges of these nuclear power plants on a ship, and they just pull up to the port, and boom, they got power. Yeah. You know?
Where's ours?
Yeah, well, you know, yeah, Mr. Fusion.
I don't see one. I've been reading about small modular reactors for a long time, and there's a bunch of companies that are out there doing it, but they, you know, they all have their prototype, but ain't nobody really building them. They're talking about it. I guess Gates was talking about building some in Idaho for a while, and then that kind of fell through, and, you know, it's a thing. But bottom line is, even these small modular reactors, they're not going to be cheap, and nobody's going to build them unless they can run them. And the more solar energy they put up, the harder it is for them to justify building a baseload generating plant that's not going to run baseload. Who's going to invest in that?
Well,
I'm not as a venture capitalist. I'm gonna I'm gonna loan you $1 billion to build this plant that you're gonna run a.
But they make 10%
of the time
these large baseload plants almost impossible.
If you want to move to the free state and you're looking for some real estate, well, I know a guy who's really great. It's the Realtor Mark Warda.
Now you can learn more about the awesome things happening here in New Hampshire in our march toward liberty in our lifetime. Our friends at Porcupine Real Estate are hosting a series of webinars to educate you on the expanded freedoms enjoyed by New Hampshire citizens. Reserve your seat today at move.freetalklive.com. Topics include gun freedom, medical freedom, and political freedom victories. They also have a couple on best practices for moving to the free state and finding housing. These webinars are super helpful and free to attend once you've registered at move.freetalklive.com. Visit their YouTube channel, Porcupine Real Estate, for videos from past presentations and sign up for upcoming webinars for free at move.freetalklive.com.
PorcupineRealEstate.com.